Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
Years ago, a white mob destroyed the area known as Black Wall Street. This was the Tulsa Race Massacre. They killed as many as 300 people, and for decades, the scale of that violent attack on Tulsa's Greenwood neighborhood wasn't widely known. But as NPR's David Gura reports, that moment in history weighs heavily on some of today's highest-profile black executives.
J.B. Stratford was a pillar of Black Wall Street. He fought for civil rights, he built a luxury hotel in Tulsa, among several other businesses, and according to his great-grandson, the investor John Rogers, Stratford made a fortune.
Over time, we think it would have compounded to over $100 million. We think it would have been real serious wealth that J.B. Stratford would have been able to create and then to be able to share with his descendants as the years went on.
At the time, Tulsa was awash with oil money, and Greenwood was a place of prosperity and possibility.
They were all in it together. They gained an enormous amount of confidence of, you know, what they could do as business leaders and the kind of educational opportunities they'd be able to give to their kids and, you know, build multi-generational wealth was really the dream.
Black Wall Street was a commercial center, vibrant with movie theaters and restaurants and barbershops. Every profession was represented there, Rogers says. There were doctors and lawyers, and something that made it special was the money stayed in that community. Everyone did business with each other. 100 years ago, all that was wiped out.
This was absolutely brutal, what happened.
Ken Chenault was one of the first black CEOs to run a Fortune 500 company. He led American Express from 2001 to 2018. And Chenault first heard about what happened in Tulsa when he was a teenager. He says it was shocking.
I think what's very important to understand is the fear that blacks had that almost anything they had was fragile because it could be taken away from them.
Chenault says he marvels at what Greenwood's residents managed to build in Tulsa, despite the prejudice and racism they endured, despite extreme odds. And during his long career in business, Chenault has thought about the lives lost and the consequences of so many businesses ruined and wealth destroyed.
What I certainly would have liked to have seen happen, and I certainly believed it would, was that the number of blacks as CEOs would have increased.
In fact, that number is getting smaller. When Ken Frazier steps down from Merck next month, there will be 4 black CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, and one of them is Tashonda Brown Duckett. She's the CEO of TIAA, a financial services firm that manages more than $1 trillion in assets. The Tulsa Massacre was not something she learned about in school, but now it's something she thinks about every day. There's a picture of Black Wall Street hanging on the wall of her office.
Because I represent Black Wall Street going forward in the future and the promise of what was denied 100 years ago.
Duckett is one of only 2 black women running Fortune 500 companies. And she says what happened in Tulsa is part of the reason why there aren't more executives who look like her, who are doing what she's doing in corporate America.
You know, we talk a lot about structural and systemic racism. And I think what the Tulsa Massacre shows us, it gives a real face and a narrative to what that really means.
Duckett says the damage has compounded over the last 100 years. Insurers denied survivors' claims, and so did the government. And that's contributed to an erosion of trust in the financial system. Well, that's something she's trying to restore. And so is John Rogers, J.B. Stratford's great-grandson, who points to signs of progress. Today, there are more black board members at public companies, for instance. But there hasn't been anything like that sense of community in Greenwood.
What we're still missing is the opportunity to build businesses the way that we had in Tulsa 100 years ago.
When Black Wall Street burned, Stratford couldn't save his business. He was taken into custody and charged with rioting, but he escaped, first to Kansas, then to Illinois.
He never was able to replicate the success that he had had in Tulsa.
Everything Stratford worked for disappeared in one day. And that's driven Rogers as he's built his business, one of the largest black-owned financial firms in the country. David Gura, NPR News.
And we should note that TIAA is one of NPR's financial supporters.
After George Floyd's murder and the massive protests that followed, we saw a lot of companies that felt like they needed to say something. I mean, do you remember what commercials were like in the summer of 2020?
The American Dream.
Cue very serious music and voice of God narration.
It wasn't made for everybody.
A seemingly widespread embrace of Black voiceovers.
It forgot about one very important detail. Black America.
Then there might be a 60-second capsule history of racism in America. Maybe a vintage civil rights era photo. Footage of that summer's protests. Candid portraits of young Black people smiling at the camera. Or alternatively, looking contemplative.
Black dreams matter. Black voices matter. Black lives matter.
And then at some point, maybe you notice a discreet copyright 2020. The Coca-Cola company watermark at the bottom of the screen. In this case, a commercial for Sprite. Now that need to be out front of a national social movement, it meant suddenly companies were proclaiming themselves allies. To be silent is to be complicit, as Netflix said on Twitter. There were a lot of corporate tweets like that and a lot of commercials like that Sprite one, but there were also pledges, promises, and bulleted list of goals. McDonald's said it would tie executive pay to diversity targets. Companies from Zoom to General Electric created chief diversity officer positions. Consider this. Companies pledged transformational change during last summer's racial justice protests. A year later, we ask, did they change? From NPR, I'm Audie Cornish. It's Thursday, June 3rd. It's Consider This from NPR. Big structural change is what big corporations were promising last summer. They made statements, they donated millions to civil rights organizations, and they promised to address their own problems with diversity and representation. How did that go? NPR's David Gura looked into it.
There were many CEOs who didn't know how to respond. That much was clear to Darren Walker, who's the president of the Ford Foundation, a philanthropy that focuses on social justice and inequality.
They had no African-Americans on their board. They had no African-American in the C-suite.
And Walker remembers fielding more than a dozen phone calls from executives who he says were disturbed and deeply concerned.
There was not both lived experience and expert knowledge to advise, provide counsel and wisdom to the CEOs and the boards.
1 year later, representation continues to be an issue. Just days before the anniversary of George Floyd's death, the investment bank Morgan Stanley promoted four men to senior leadership roles. It's widely understood they'll vie to succeed James Gorman, the current CEO. He's white, and so are they. At a Senate hearing, Gorman pointed to other recent promotions, and he said he's committed to diversity, but
this organization has been built over many decades, and it takes a long time for talent to rise to the top.
The Ford Foundation's Darren Walker says companies have to do a better job of finding talent and holding on to it.
We are past the kind of token efforts of corporate America. This has to be about transformation, and transformation requires more transparency.
Of the 500 largest publicly traded companies, almost a third of them don't have one Black person on their boards. That's according to Equilar, a clearinghouse for corporate leadership data. And while that's a smaller percentage than what it was in May of 2020, you can still count the number of Black chief executives in the Fortune 500 on one hand. A year ago, business leaders spoke out. Then they cut checks to nonprofits and civil rights groups. One of them is Campaign Zero, an organization focused on police reform, founded by DeRay McKesson.
I think that for most of these corporations, money's easy, right? Like the money is literally the least risky and easiest thing you can do.
What's more difficult is delivering on the promise of more diversity in leadership and among the rank and file.
I think to be very honest, we try to not be too reactionary.
Ralph Bassett is a portfolio manager at Aberdeen Standard Investments. It's joined a coalition of financial services companies that have committed to publishing more data and to spending more money on career development for minorities.
We didn't want to come across as insincere or within that context too reactionary, such that we couldn't provide the necessary framework for driving what we view to be sustainable change.
That kind of cautiousness is common on Wall Street, where cultural change tends to happen slowly. But other companies have approached this issue with the same kind of deliberativeness. Starbucks hired former Attorney General Eric Holder to conduct what it calls a civil rights assessment of the company's policies. And Facebook, which has no person of color among its 7 most senior executives, wants 30% more Black people in leadership positions in 5 years.
We want to witness incremental progress, but realize it's going to take a number of years to get to where we want.
In corporate America, the urgency of the moment, the demand for change, is sometimes at odds with what's perceived to be possible. Ebony Thomas works on improving the pipeline for talent at Bank of America. She's an executive whose portfolio is racial equality and economic opportunity. Well, Thomas graduated from North Carolina A&T University, and she's encouraging her company to recruit more from historically Black colleges and universities like the one she attended.
I mean, progress is progress, and it's slow, but we still have to recognize progress.
Bank of America's CEO also testified before Congress, and Brian Moynihan highlighted company data on diversity. It succeeded in hiring more Black employees overall. That number is now in line with the U.S. population. But only 1 in 20 senior-level managers is Black. And that number hasn't budged.
That's NPR's David Gura. There's a whole industry that's focused on making the type of change those companies are promising. DEI. 3 letters we're hearing a lot. They stand for diversity, equity, and inclusion. And the DEI industry, it's big.
It's a collection of folks who are in various different industries. They work in HR. They work in the legal profession. Some of them are like myself. They're academics. And they're all kind of under this umbrella of working toward organizational equity. It is an incredibly nebulous definition.
This is Kim Tran, who spoke to NPR's Sam Sanders. She's a DEI consultant. And she says the roots of what is now a multi-billion dollar juggernaut started during a prior moment of racial reckoning.
When diversity, equity, and inclusion began, it was in response to the quote-unquote affirmative action call by JFK.
Civil rights. We hope in the next few days to have an executive order forthcoming which will strengthen the employment opportunities both in and out of the government for all Americans. And it will be followed as time goes on with other actions by the federal government to expand employment possibilities.
And that was in response to the Black American Civil Rights Movement. You had a lot of change happening around the same time. You had the Civil Rights Act, you had the Voting Rights Act, you had, you know, these calls for affirmative action.
But Kim Tran says the ideals that sparked those new changes very quickly became tied up with other concerns.
What happened was companies got really scared of litigation. So they create a whole bunch of trainings and a whole bunch of people to do these trainings. And most of the time, those folks are housed in human resources. But they're not the people who actually created this idea of racial justice or equity or equality in the first place.
And they aren't the ones doing the hiring in many of these instances.
Oh my gosh, no.
Tran says that today, many of these efforts miss the mark completely.
A lot of DEI feels like performative allyship. I went to the training and then I put the hashtag up and then we did a Pride Month and everybody feels great about the work.
Lily Zhang has had a front row seat to the wide range of approaches that companies have taken in response to last summer's racial justice protest, from the purely performative to commitments to structural change. So we wanted to talk to Zhang about what they've seen, what to avoid, and whether things are really changing. Zhang says you have to start in early 2020 when COVID hit and the economy sputtered. DEI, LinkedIn, it's kind of a scene. Well, it was filled with people talking about being laid off.
COVID was a tsunami hitting the DEI space. I would venture a majority of the DEI practitioners in-house and consultants who I know worked with companies were laid off, lost contracts, had their work indefinitely paused.
Then came the killings of Breonna Taylor in Kentucky and George Floyd in Minnesota, the national media tension, and the protests that spread from coast to coast.
A lot of corporations that talked to me, and I can only really talk about those experiences, said, Lily, we're getting a lot of incoming pressure from our own employees internally, and also some pressure from our customers and clients that we've never seen before externally. Can you come in and help us talk about these topics? Now, the interesting thing is I actually didn't accept most of these requests, and even the few that I talked further about, they largely dropped off. What I saw from the folks who reached out to me, they didn't wait to hear a response from me to act. I think the pressure was too high. And in fact, some of these companies, which I won't name, put out social media messages. They wanted something quick. They wanted something speedy. And I suppose I just wasn't fast enough to meet their demands. And many of these companies later were, you know, criticized for being performative in their approach.
What are some consistent mistakes you see companies making when they try and work on issues of diversity, on issues of equity?
Well, that's a big question. I think the
sounds like there's a lot of mistakes.
Well, of course, there's a lot of mistakes. I mean, why would my profession exist if companies were doing it right? So one of the biggest ones, I think, is that they will allocate a laughably small amount of money, where they will put the burden of change on unfunded volunteer groups like DEI councils. But the consistent failure across all of this is to treat DEI like any other major primary business function deserving of headcount, deserving of budget, deserving of decision-making authority. And that shift has only happened, I would say, very, very recently.
What about the flip side criticism in that you're hearing more and more people say, you know, this sounds like bringing just bringing a certain kind of progressive politics into the workplace and indoctrinating people in that politics? Kind of what's your response to that?
Well, companies have never been isolated from politics. And when I talk about politics, I refer to conversation about society, social issues, economic issues. Companies have always weighed in on these things. That's the whole definition of lobbyists. Companies have already been bringing politics to work in every sense of the word since their inception in the US. And the fact that companies are being forced to, sure, call it move left, is in response to the fact that there is heaps and heaps and heaps of data showing that newer generations care more and more about companies being socially responsible, caring about their social impact. And this, I think, is a very reasonable shift for companies to take, given all of this movement happening in our broader society.
Where is it going next? And what do you see in terms of, like, is this a turning point?
I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you exactly where the field is going to go. What I think is interesting is this question about social justice, about the role of company in society, is unlikely to end. I think we're going to see, rather than a unspoken de facto status quo where we don't talk about politics in the workplace, companies being more and more outspoken about whether they are social impact, social justice companies that care about the world, or whether they are companies that on the record, on the books, perhaps proudly say, we don't talk about these issues here. And that, I think, is going to be a pretty interesting force when it comes to where people choose to work, when it comes to larger impacts on the labor market. I don't know what that's going to look like yet, but I think those trends are going to continue playing out the way that they are now.
Diversity, equity, and inclusion consultant, Lily Zhang.
This time last year, around 20 million people were out of work. Now, as the economy recovers, employers say they can't find anyone to hire. Still, millions of women have yet to return to work. NPR's Andrea Hsu talked with two of them.
For more than 20 years, Catherine Gaines worked as a legal assistant in Washington, D.C. She had a reputation for excelling at everything.
Documents, filings, briefs, scanning, whatever they needed done. I was the go-to person.
She even once planned an attorney's wedding. Early last year, her law firm downsized and she was laid off. She quickly applied to some temp agencies and got an assignment. But then
COVID kicked in. Nobody had anything for me to go to.
In a way, it was a blessing. She had recently moved in with her mom, who has Alzheimer's. Taking care of her was a full-time job. Finding an actual job in the pandemic was daunting.
I knew I couldn't work in retail because I knew I couldn't be exposed and bring it home to my mother. So I just had to just be hopeful, sit and wait. I always say God didn't bring me this far to drop me off.
Earlier this year, Gaines moved her mother into a nursing home, and now she's applying for jobs again. She'd prefer to work from home, but is okay with going into a COVID-safe workplace. Most importantly, she wants to find something that would allow her to take her mom to doctor's appointments and check in on her frequently. Gaines herself is 62 now. She's willing to hunt a little longer for the right job, at least until her unemployment benefits run out.
I'm giving myself at least till August. That's when I really hit the grind.
Caregiving responsibilities are one reason labor economists think women are not returning to the workforce in droves. But Stephanie Aronson of the Brookings Institution says other things are at play, too.
I think it's just a complex mix of factors that are keeping women out of the labor force right now.
Ongoing concerns about the virus, some industries still struggling to recover, and a change of heart about how people want to spend their time. She says women often make decisions that end up sticking. So a woman who decided to stay home with children in the pandemic might stay out of the workforce for years.
So I think that the recovery for female labor force participation could just be slow.
Across the country in Los Angeles, Valerie Mecki had been working in fashion merchandising for 18 years. Her most recent job was with a company that made uniforms for grocery stores and restaurants. She was laid off in April as the pandemic crushed the entire apparel industry.
No one was hiring.
She applied for job after job last year and kept getting ghosted. But her teenage children, they were optimistic from the start.
They had seen me work so hard in the fashion industry. And so to them, it was like, but you're going to figure it out.
Last fall, Mecki started a side hustle, a blog, to build up her online skills. She learned about things like search engine optimization. She wrote about a topic she knew well, figuring out what to do when you've lost your job. Recently, she started picking up a few freelance writing gigs. Now she's hoping to convert that into a career, even if it means taking a huge pay cut. And she's heard about other women doing the same.
I think it really, during this time, it gave us that permission to really think about our future.
But career changes take time, so full-time employment could still be a ways off. Andrea Hsu, NPR News.
The federal government, which is this country's largest employer, is starting to return many employees to their offices. White House staffers have been told to come back next month. What is not clear is just how many workers across the government will come in and how many will stay home. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
The Biden administration has told agencies to submit plans for what it calls the safe reentry of federal employees to the physical workplace by next month. It's a big job.
This is really complicated.
Teresa Gerton is president of the National Academy of Public Administration, a nonpartisan group that advises government leaders.
The administration's got to think through everything from how you deal with people who are unvaccinated and won't get vaccinated, to how you deal with labor relations, and do those contracts have to be renegotiated? What is the method of performance management for people who aren't going to be in the office? So it is not as easy as flipping a switch and just saying, everybody back.
It's not clear how many government employees were able to work from home during the pandemic. A lot of federal workers, TSA and Border Patrol officers, for instance, had no choice but to remain on site. Jeff Neal, a former head of human resources at the Department of Homeland Security, estimates that a little under half of the federal workforce have jobs in which they could work from home, although it's likely far fewer did. As for what comes next, Neal says it's probably going to be a hybrid.
What I think we're going to see is something that's somewhere between what we had pre-pandemic and what we have now. I think you're probably going to see more people working remotely. I don't think every agency is going to say anybody who wants to work from home can.
At some agencies, managers have already been calling some employees back into the office on a voluntary basis. Ralph DeJulis is president of the American Federation of Government Employees chapter that represents Social Security workers. He says the biggest concern with reopening Social Security offices is safety for employees and the public.
In many parts of the country, people
aren't vaccinated, we're nowhere near herd immunity, and we don't want the vulnerable populations that we serve exposed to packed lobbies where people are going to literally have to wait post-pandemic like they did pre-pandemic for hours just to turn in documents.
Aside from issues such as ensuring proper ventilation for workers and the public at federal offices, Jeff Neal, the former HR official, says there are other concerns for managers, including morale.
How do I feel if I can't work from home because of my job, but you get to work from home all the time? You don't have to pay for childcare. You don't have to commute. You don't have to spend 2 hours a day getting to and from work. That could create some morale issues.
Still, Teresa Girton says, while there may be problems to overcome, there is also the chance for improvements for federal employees and on how services are delivered to the public.
It's an opportunity to fundamentally reimagine what it means to work for the federal government. And it's an opportunity to kind of shake things up and say, we've been doing it this way since the 1950s. Maybe we should think about something different for the next 50 years.
One thing seems certain, it's going to take a while to establish what is the new normal for federal employees and the public they serve. Brian Naylor, NPR News.
Black brother.
Black brother, hell.
Nella Rogers was happy at first to see that another black woman has been hired as an editorial assistant at Wagner Books. She's often tired of being just about the only black person in the room, actually in pretty much all the rooms of the publisher. One morning, Nella sees through a small crack in a cubicle what she calls the flash of a brown hand. Let's ask Zakiya Dalila Harris, author of the new novel, The Other Black Girl, to read what she first sees of Hazel May McCall.
The girl had a wide, symmetrical face and two almond-colored eyes perfectly spaced between a Lena Horne nose and a generous forehead. Her skin was a shade or two darker than Nella's chestnut complexion, falling somewhere between hickory and umber. And her locks, every one as thick as a bubble tea straw and longer than her arms, started out as a deep brown, then turned honey blonde as they continued past her ears. And then there was the girl's pantsuit, a smart-looking ensemble composed of a single-button marigold jacket and a matching pair of oversized slacks that hit a couple of inches above the ankle. Below that, a pair of red patent leather high-heeled ankle boots that Nella would have broken her neck just trying to get into.
The Other Black Girl is one of the spring's most anticipated novels. It's the debut of Zakiya Dalila Harris, who spent 3 years in publishing and joins us from New York. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such an honor to be here.
Well, it's our honor. And we should note, by the way, your sister, Aisha Harris, is co-host of the Pop Culture Happy Hour podcast here at NPR. But she is not involved in our show's editorial process, to our deficit, I'm sure. What different thoughts are set off in Nella by the arrival of Hazel May?
She is so curious. She is really just genuinely excited. She has been the only Black person at Wagner Books for the last 2 years. And so to have this flash of color in this space that's usually really drab and frankly very white, Nella's enthusiastic and excited about that and what that could mean for her.
Hmm. We should mention that Hazel May has kind of a matchless backstory, doesn't she?
Yeah. I mean, she is really kind of the poster child for Blackness in a lot of ways, of what the en vogue kind of Blackness is. She comes from civil rights kind of royalty. She expresses her opinions about things in a very confident way. She is really the millennial who is speaking out. But at the same time, she's also able to navigate this very white world of Wagner Books in a very smooth kind of way that Nella actually doesn't necessarily navigate as well. And so that contrast really sets up a lot of interesting, I'll just say interesting dynamics between them.
And what kind of everyday pressures has Nella, like so many other Black women in U.S. publishing, and not just U.S. publishing, faced?
Being the only one means a lot of things for Nella. The thing that is really hard for her is the fact that she feels like she has to speak for every Black person, every Black opinion. She's expected to speak, but in a certain way, right? She has to come off in a way that's also appealing to her coworkers. And that can change depending on what's in vogue, what's popular. So she really has to kind of fit herself into the mold that they believe she should be in.
I'm sure you knew this question was coming from the first moment you began to write the book. What part is fiction and what part is memoir?
A lot of it is fiction. A lot of it is exaggeration. I fortunately did not have it nearly as bad as Nella does. I also wasn't the only Black person where I worked. I was still one of a few, not many, and the only Black woman in editorial. So that part of looking around the table and not seeing anyone who looked like me, that part was very real. But the characters were very much a fun amalgamation of certain quirks, certain conversations I've overheard, all of those zany hijinks that you see in an office when you're close with other people like that. So that element was pretty on point.
Then one day, da-da-da-da, there's a note on Nella's desk. Leave Wagner, period, now. It's sinister, but a little ambiguous. How do you hope people react?
I mean, I wanted to have this mysterious element that kind of throws a wrench into Nella's plans, her life at Wagner Books. But I really want the reader to think about the note. It was more for the reader because I want them to think about who they think would have left it for her. And I think you can tell a lot about a reader by what they expect.
Oh, who they kind of have in their crosshairs.
Yeah, because there are a lot of suspects, right? There are a lot of people who could have done it. And throughout this book, I really wanted readers to question their own prejudices, their own kind of analysis of certain interactions. And that note, I think, is just one example.
I found it sad when I reached the part in the book where Nella says that Hazel made her feel redundant.
Yeah, I mean, it really goes into my own ideas that I have about, I mean, it's not only publishing. I think it's a lot of industries that are mostly white where we commodify Blackness, where you only need this one version of this thing for this one purpose. Whereas diversity is not like that. You have to be thoughtful about how you're speaking with people, how you see the office, because all of those things matter. They make a difference into whether or not a place feels inclusive. So when Hazel's in the space, Nella feels like, okay, well, they have someone else who dresses cooler than me, who speaks on these things much more clearly and confidently than I do. Everyone seems to love her. My purpose here, my worth here is in question now.
No one's cooler than Nella, but I'm just saying.
Well, thank you. As someone who really put her own personal quirks into Nella, I'm glad to hear that.
I see we finally wrung that out of you.
Yes, you got me.
Zakiya Dalila Harris is author of The Other Black Girl. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
Again, such an honor to be here with you today.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. I was interested in reading that book because I was thinking, oh, wow, that's something we could have for the book club, and it would deal with workplace racism. Like, oh, that's awesome. We could read a book about the workplace for the book club. And then the more I heard, like, I became less interested for some reason, but we'll have to see what folks think if that's maybe something for the book club. Incidentally, I did think the book title is not The Other Black Woman or The Other Black Lady. It's The Other Black Girl. Boys and girls, Dr. Welsing. Today's date, Friday, June 4th. for 2021. So I have been told. This is our weekly summit on neutralizing workplace racism. This is not a broadcast for spectators. I'm very sure if we have victims of racism anywhere in the known universe, if you have a job and or are in school, you probably are experiencing some workplace racism yourself and or are observing things. Certainly as it relates to the COVID-19 situation, there's a lot to observe, and workplace safety, which has been a big issue, especially here in the U.S. All year long. Anywho, at least on the vaccine, I've seen where more and more, it looks like it's kind of going to be a done deal for universities, colleges this autumn. It looks like it's going to be required. Vaccine, like Oregon, I think, just signed off. I think many of the major institutions in California have already done so. Rutgers in New Jersey, like, it just seems like more and more are falling in line. If you have offspring and they're going to be enrolling in some institution this fall, or if you yourself are looking to be in school in September, August, it's looking like you're going to have vaccination proof and or a legal exemption. So that's definitely something to pay attention to, speak about if you have children who are headed that direction. But again, not for spectators, and particularly if you have any helpful information in terms of just anything that would benefit non-white people in a workplace setting, things to know that are helpful to get a promotion, things to know when it's time for a performance review, questions to ask, or, you know, what have you, things, questions that are helpful if you are being interviewed for a job, just any helpful tidbits, minimizing conflict with other non-white people in the workplace, talking about the other black girl, anything like that that you found, like, hey, doing these things, saying these specific words, this is helpful in solving problems without creating new problems. Don't be a spectator. The number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Share the broadcast on social media, wherever you use or have some real estate online. You can also follow us on Twitter at Until Justice, on Facebook, facebook.com/ The Problem Is White People. But again, the number for the broadcast, no spectating, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Letting the plane go by. Incidentally, since I moved, I have a very nice balcony. I'm broadcasting outside for the entire summer. Like, we just have to tolerate a plane going overhead every now and then. Like, unless they can make it rain really bad, or monsoon or something to that effect, we are chilling outside, listen to the birds, or enjoy the silence. Love it either way. Oh, there they go. Anywho, quickly for these segments, and then we'll get to the callers and such. Wow. And it could have been easily lots more. I didn't even play, in my view, all of the workplace racism, the professional athletes, Naomi Osaka and her dropping out of the French Open, and the numerous NBA athletes, I think Russell Westbrook and Kyrie Irving, and it was loads of black basketball players. The fans just got back to the arena, and then they were throwing items at black players left and right, and racist slurs being yelled. It became a big to-do. Like, what are we going to do? All these unruly fans, and they were making all kinds of excuses. Like, well, you know, the Rona, and people have been inside for the past 16 months, so they're excited, you know? They got all this pent-up energy. Alcohol was mentioned a few times as well. But all of that, even Naomi Osaka citing mental health reasons as to why she did not want to speak with the press at the French Open and then withdrawing because white people at the tournament, WTA, tried to pressure her to speak to the press. That's part of your responsibility as a professional athlete, they said. She said, well, fine, I'll drop out of the tournament. All of that is workplace racism. And I'll just say, because I do think that that is nowhere near a priority in relation to typical victims of white supremacy racism who are not pro athletes, who have all kinds of problems and things that are not, you know, I'm not talking to the press today or someone threw popcorn at me, way bigger issues, you know, for what this program is supposed to be focused on. But I will say, composure. I think for many of those incidents, racist, suspected racist fans assaulting players, throwing items at them, projectiles. Composure. Not wigging out, because we talk about that every week. Many of us, whether we're pro athletes or couch potatoes, many of us work in environments where individuals classified as white attempt to provoke us. You heard that, it was even in the book. Now, we don't know if it's a white person who did it or not, but the note, you know, all that, in a variety of ways. Keeping your composure is so important. And they talked about that in any of these incidents. Russell Westbrook or someone, if they had went and, you know, snatched up one of these folks for throwing a water bottle at them or whatever else, oh my goodness, you know, they would have been arrested and lost millions of dollars and, you know, been fined and suspended and all the rest of it. So real important, really, in my view, the most important component of counter-racism in the workplace and beyond, composure. Can't become emotional and forget about logic and just, you know, trying to do the correct thing in solving problems, especially in the workplace. Now, the segments that we did hear, wow, so much. So they started with Tulsa, Oklahoma, and talking about the number of black businesses that were destroyed and then insurance claims denied. Have heard that over and over throughout history with black people and how so much wealth was lost and how this even impacts black people today who are in business and what have you and all the rest of it. Important for a myriad of reasons. I've said for a long time, the circumstances around Black Wall Street have not changed. White people might use different methods now. They might not necessarily fly a plane overhead and bomb your facility. They might use taxes or, you know, lots of different ways of getting black people to move, putting a freeway there. Lots of different ways. But I thought that was important also because we heard, like, I think 2 weeks ago, Carlos Hill is professor, author of the book, The 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre, A Photographic History, VGQ, non-white male. And he was saying that the resilience, you know, the renaissance that took place in Tulsa and it came back stronger. And I think some of our listeners and myself were like, I don't know. That doesn't seem to make sense because they didn't repair the damage, the folks who lost businesses and property. It's not like they were compensated. So that, to me, doesn't seem logical that things would be back better after all of this. And I didn't hear anything to the contrary in that clip. That's exactly what I thought. Insurance not being paid out. And wow, look how much money they lost and the amount that they had of wealth that they had accumulated. And then all of that is just vanishes. Incident of white terrorism. I mean, that's the system that we still live in, folks. Motivation to solve this problem. Let's see. Next, they talked about, I guess, kind of an analysis a year after many businesses and corporations responded to the George Floyd protests and what have you. I remember a lot of those tacky statements that even went through the Super Bowl where they had a lot of those tacky ads and what have you and talking about racism and what have you. They had Dr. Harry Edwards do some of the Super Bowl commercials talking about racism. All of that I feel is just really tacky in my view. Suspected racists, white supremacists are at their worst when they are out pretending, doing an old Jane Elliott admitted racist, that they are against racism. Nothing is tackier The confusion is profound. You even heard it in that segment. They said, we come in and we do our diversity and inclusion equality day, and then we go out and we do hashtag for diversity, inclusion, and pride. Now, what are we even talking about? Like conflation, we're just, everything is just kind of slopped in and thrown together. I didn't even hear white supremacy mentioned. We've got all these other goofy terms, microaggression and diversity, inclusion. Like I said, Jane Elliott and company, that's what I saw. Those type of people came up last year. Like, oh, let's get all of our diversity and inclusion equality officers and Jane Elliott's and Dr. Robin DiAngelo and Timothy Wise and all the rest. Let's wheel them all in here and let's do a Zoom conference and talk about diversity. And yes, justice. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm sure Dr. Eddie Moore with the White Privilege Conference, cowbell. I'm sure he got a phone call too. Gus T did not. Let's see. They said they even Starbucks requested Eric Holder's services to make a civil rights assessment of their policy. I don't even know what that means. Incidentally, if we have anyone here, if you function as a diversity and inclusion officer, please dial in and let us know how you function in your role. What are your duties? What do you do on a daily basis in that capacity? Would love to know. And how have your duties and functions changed over the past year? That might be interesting too. Incidentally, I've been saying it, I guess, for a year now. I totally supported President Trump when it was, hey, forget all this critical race theory. We're no longer doing this in the workplace. Like, whoopee, no more welfare for the Jane Elliott's of the world. Remember, I've been saying that for a while. Let's see. The women, the segment where they talked about women not working. I've seen many, many reports on a large number or sizable number of females no longer in the workplace after the COVID situation or not returning. They've got childcare responsibilities or caring for other family members, as we heard, or elderly parents and the like. I don't know that. I don't know if they mean like white women. It sounded like that was an audio report. It sounded like the female being interviewed may have been a black female, non-white female. But I didn't have a visualization. It's at least from folks that we've talked to, we have not, you know, heard from droves of female listeners who said, oh, yeah, I stopped working during the crisis and have not returned to the workforce. We've not heard that. Most of the female listeners that, you know, have participated that we've heard from, they were working when all this started and have continued working right on through. Maybe their work situation changed to some degree, but we haven't exactly, if those folks are out there, please call, you know, dial in, let us know. But that's not the sense that I've got. So yeah, I don't know if they mean white women, not everybody, just females in general. Like, yeah, I would need more information on that one. Let's see. When they talked about trying to get people back into the workplace, federal workplace, I thought that was significant just because historically the federal government has employed a slightly disproportionate number of black people, meaning a number, like think of places like Washington, D.C., where black people could get jobs where maybe other white people might not hire them. And so in talking about how they're kind of figure out what the workplace is going to look like with the adjustment in terms of having some sort of moral concern about the workplace. I don't know what they mean at all, like in terms of a work. I don't even know how to begin to process that in terms of morality in a workplace. Like, we can't even get people like Jeffrey Toobin to keep their pants zipped up. So yeah, I'm lost on that one. Like, let's just try to make sure we have PPE and people wash their hands and we don't have to call that morality. Let's see. Like I said, the segment with novelist, I thought it was interesting. They're calling her novelist. This is her first book, but victim of white supremacy, Zakiya DeLiva Harris, black female born in Connecticut, the other black girl, her book coming out. I thought it was super important. They mentioned that she worked, Ms. Harris, in the publishing industry and she draws from that experience in this novel. The publishing industry is far from the realm of white male patriarchy. It is widely documented. White women dominate the publishing industry, and I mean like dominate. Like, I think it's well over 70% of the folks who control the major book publishing industries, houses, companies, are white women. Not white people, white women specifically. So to not have that pointed out, we just mentioned the second time this week I'm saying that. I mentioned that we had Dr. James H. Madison on the program Tuesday, this deliberate work. And I know this because they've had big reports about this. Al Jazeera did like a big documentary on this. They had a big round table discussion and talking about this, like, wow, this is not one where we can just blame this on white men and what's going on here and rah, 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 and all that. And so that's one. Next, I thought still that that was important because this book, I haven't read it, The Other Black Girl, but this book apparently is about black female workplace setting, apparently publishing industry. And then another black female comes in and they are not black sister homies. Immediately, there's some sort of tension. I have talked about this for years in saying, you see another non-white person, someone classified as black in a workplace setting, that's not your homie, that's not your friend, none of the above. You go into that situation, this is just someone who works here, I'm going to be professional, I'm going to be courteous, but I'm not going to be thinking that, oh, we are on the same wavelength and this is my homie and I trust this person and, oh, where'd you get those shoes from? And here, like, wrong on all accounts. I have no idea who this person is, what their interests are, what orders they have. All of that could have been the black female who wrote the note in this situation. So I mean, all of that is, in my view, just about having a correct understanding of the system of white supremacy, workplace and beyond. Just because a person has a certain amount of melanin does not mean they are your counter-racist counterpart. Not the case at all. or I guess the last thing that I'll get in, when Miss Harris, she was being interviewed, she said that one of the characters in The Other Black Girl is the poster child for blackness. And that was another one where I said, what? Write that, put that up there with morality. Poster child for blackness. And then she qualified. She's from the lineage of civil rights royalty. She expresses her opinions confidently. She's not just going to be cowed and be quiet. And she's able to navigate this workplace environment confidently, smoothly, whatever that means. I have no idea how all of that translates to so-called blackness. If that makes sense to anyone, please share. And if that's how you describe the poster child for blackness, well, then most people who are classified as black wouldn't even qualify. Most of us are not from civil rights lineage, civil rights royalty. We don't have some sort of connection to that directly. I don't think most of us express our opinions, at least if you're a Cows listener. I don't encourage expressing your opinion about things in a workplace setting. That sounds like making statements. We suggest asking questions. And then able to smoothly navigate a work environment. Like, man, pretty much everybody I know is still learning on that one. Like, so yeah, very few people would qualify for, you know, how she's explaining being a poster child for blackness, whatever that means. Maybe if somebody got that, they can share. I'll stop there. As I said, I was excited about maybe checking that book out for the book club, but now hearing that, I'm less inclined. All of that said, let's see, we'll push off to the callers. The number again is 720-716-1020. 7300, the code 564943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Still very interested in hearing folks. Let us know, has your work environment undergone significant changes over the past couple of weeks? Excuse me, since they've said the vaccine is so effective, if you're vaccinated, you can, you know, ditch the mask and everything. Have you experienced major changes where you work? Are things still kind of the same? Definitely want to hear about that. The female listeners, if we have folks who, you know, for whatever reason, you have vacated your work position temporarily, what have you, during the past 16 months or what have you, and are taking some time, if the report is accurate, if that's the case, we have any female listeners, let us know. But my general sense is that we really have not had many folks in that position, but I might be in error. So if we have any females who have left the workforce temporarily during the last few months, while all this is kind of panning out, feel free, dial in to share. The number again is 720-716-7300, the code 564943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I reckon if we have folks who are dealing with the college situation as well, it's looking like it's going to be vaccine. No vaccine, no campus life for you coming this fall. So if that's something folks are having to navigate, if you already have your strategy, if you're just going to get the vaccine or if you're not, whatever the loopholes are, that would be good to know as well. Let's see. We'll check the phone line and nab folks who have thoughts, views to share. Let's see. First few folks who dialed in with the hand up, line should be open.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Right, poorly. Victim in New Jersey.
Let me tell you, I don't know if I have enough minutes to explain my 4-week wackiness. I told you I left my old plantation, started a new job. My old company, my supervisor kept calling, checking on me, you know, because I didn't tell them I started a new job. I just told them, hey, listen, you know, I told them about my business. That's what I'm doing. So he constantly was calling, you know, offering me things, you know, to come back whenever I wanted to, just keep that in mind, you know. So I started the new job. I didn't really like it, Gus. The hours was long, the workload was a little heavier, so I backtracked. I went back. So I went and, I gave the other company, I was there for 2 weeks. That Friday I said, hey, you know, it's been nice. Day two, I mean, I don't know if there's a shortage of workers, but metaphor, these employers are very thirsty, especially for an experienced truck driver. So I go back to the old plantation. Gus, I regretted it. I was there, and I thought to myself while I was there, I said, you left for a reason. You know, so, I mean, I just was, you know what? I don't know what I thought. I mean, they gave me more money. I went back. It wasn't, you know, it was only $3. So it really wasn't that much of a boost. And they gave me the petty gas card again. I got my last check from the other employer and it was substantially larger. Like, again, hours are longer, workload is a little bit heavier, but again, I'm not trying to be on the workforce no more than, I'm not trying to work for anybody no more than 2 years until the business really jumps off. So I basically made up some story. You know what, Gus? I don't know why I'm like not being upfront with this particular employee, but I just let him know last Friday I said, I'm done. I called the other employee that I left, and they welcomed me back with open arms, and I went back. So now it's like I'm just getting my old employee, old employer, is calling me every day because I didn't tell them I started a new job. I told them that, listen, I'm just doing my, you know, I told them I gotta handle my business. The driver that I had is not, didn't work out. So, you know, I'm driving my own truck. So now, I mean, he's just calling and calling and calling, you know, I know you're doing your own thing, but could you just work 2 days? Could you just work a week? You know, how are you going to pay your health benefits? Like, you know, he's just, I mean, to the point where I'm like, it's annoying. And I'm like, you know, why am I not able to just tell them that, you know, tell my old employee to just kind of like F off. Maybe I feel like that may be a safety blanket just in case anything goes wrong. I don't want to burn any bridges. But the other day I thought to myself, I said, you know what? This is a bridge I need to burn. You know what? And I'm never going back. But this employer, like I told you, when you're on vacation, he calls. Oh, can you work for your vacation? I mean, if you ask for some days off because it's a small company, that's difficult. And I'm trying to quit. I don't want to work there no more. And this particular employee is still constantly texting, calling. You know, I don't know, Gus. I mean, it sounds wacky, but I'm like, it just kind of like speaks to this 10-year toxic relationship I had with this job. You know, the fact that they're not only comfortable to contact you when you're off the books, they contact you when you're on vacation. They're contacting me when I quit. I'm just like, and you can't make this up. And I just got a text today, and it's like, hey, you know, what are you going to do about, you know, healthcare? I mean, that's really none of your business. Like, I mean, is this a ploy for me to come back? You know, if you think that I'm going to come back just because, you know, because I'm working in, well, you think I'm working independently in my own business, and you're like, listen, you know, you possibly can't afford health care, so, you know, come back, you know. Don't you want to come back? I mean, you don't have to pay for health care. Gus, I mean, man, listen, again, I'm still learning, and this is just a pure example of how no matter how I call the show, however other people call the show, we're still learning. At times, I don't think that I handled this situation well. I think I handled it poorly. I don't know. I'm just lost for words right now dealing with this former employee. And it seems like, you know, I'm a battered wife or something. And you know, my abusive lover keeps calling.
Wow. Well, definitely thank you for disclosing, being honest with us. And there is a reason. Hey. Still learning. Gus T. Renegade, victim in New Jersey, Neely Fuller Jr. I don't know anybody in the known universe who is a victim of racism, non-white person, who can truthfully say, oh, I learned everything you need to know about racism, counter-racism. Got it. I don't make those type of goofy mistakes no more. That's just you and, you know, Gus's goofy listeners who do that. I don't know anybody who can truthfully say that. So be patient with yourself, sir. And the other thing I say is, hey, that's counter-racist codification right there, too. That's the essence of it. You are the person, really, in many cases, the only person who will know, like, man, I could have done a much better job today. Like, I have a lot of room for improvement. If I had this situation, the same type of situation presented to me again, there are a number of things that I would do better, that I would do differently. I would say this and not this. I would, you know, and in the system of white supremacy, racists will probably give you that opportunity. So hold tight. I had a strong moment for Pamela Evans Harris late. Missed dearly. But that was the same metaphor that she used to use. Not thirsty. The battered wife syndrome, and saying that, you know, in the system of racism, white supremacy, that's what we got, you know, and being in such a dependent position as we are, as, you know, many females in battered relationships, that'll be the case for them as well often. But I think that metaphor applies to many victims of racism. I know, speaking of Pam, Renethia Tate, she wrote and talked about frequently black people because of years of terrorism. Like you said, safety net, safety, terrorism. It's difficult for us sometimes to say no to white people in regardless of the context. When being, you know, sexually abused, difficult to say no. A workplace scenario, difficult to say no. Come on and get these extra hours. Come on and work this, you know, double shifts every day for the next month. Difficult to say no. Come on back to this job. That is white power and years of terrorism in saying no to a white person. My question was just going to be, I guess, well, you already said, I guess you answered that one. You said safety net. That was a big one. And that's understandable if you're venturing out and trying to work for yourself and that sort of thing. I guess it would be if you had it to do over again, what do you think is the one thing, like, bam, if I had behaved differently at this point right here, this could have nixed a whole lot of this in the butt, and this is what I'll do next time.
If I would basically, I wouldn't feel like I had to lie, you know, just basically be upfront. Like, I'm done, you know, I'm moving on, you know, period. You know, I shouldn't have left any room for this particular employer to think that I was coming back. And that was basically the conclusion that I left. Well, that they can draw. That, oh, you know, he just, you know, he didn't have a stable driver. So, you know, once he gets a stable driver to drive his truck, he'll be back. And I mean, you know, this particular employee even offered to find a driver for me. So, you know, so it was just kind of that. And I think that when I talked about the safety net, you know, it was just like, you know, venturing off, start my own business, and also going to another company, you know, the fear of not being able to financially take care of myself, you know, if the business was not to succeed, or if I was to get this job and, you know, I don't like it, or, you know, let's just say they lay me off, you know, just to leave that, just to have that safety net, to use the metaphor, to be able to go back and have some form of employment. So I think that's what I was doing. I was basically just trying to leave that option open if all else failed. But when I went back, you know, I'm just like, you know, you left for a reason. Like you're attempting to start your own trucking company for a reason. And when I went back, it just, you know, nothing changed, you know. So I was like, I'm like, what am I thinking? Like, I went back and it's still a small company that's micromanaged, that's, again, like I said, very, you know, very toxic, no regard for your off time. No, I mean, you would think that I was some kind of manager or I had some kind of stocks in this business, the way they want you to perform for this particular business. So, you know, but if I can do it all over again, you know what? It'll just be a flat out, listen, I'm done. Stop calling me. I'm done. That's what I would do all over again.
Much obliged, victim in New Jersey. I guess my hey, like I said, race soldiers, they will probably give you another opportunity to see if you have strengthened how you practice counter-racism, white supremacy. I would say, one, I think it's important. The phone is there for your benefit. I think that's a really important something just to remember for life. You do not have to answer the phone. Ghosting, I think, the term that the young folks use, like they can call. You don't even have to answer, you know, if they're calling. Oh, I already see the number. Nah, I'm good. And they'll get the point. No big deal. Even though I think it's totally logical, totally reasonable. To say, man, I got concerns, you know, if this doesn't work out, if I don't like this new job, or if I get laid off, or, you know, anything like that. It's reasonable to have some of those concerns, like, ooh, I don't want to, I think, as you said, burn any bridges. You know, maybe this is at least something that I know. It's secure, it's stable. Now they want to give me the gas card and then all that stuff. Incidentally, I think that's so tacky. Like, he had talked to us before when he's called in previously, and this gas card was an issue. They could have done that before, like months ago, if they really valued and wanted him to be on the team, as he said. Like, it wasn't like he was asking for stock options or make me a CEO of the company. Like, gas card, which they then can provide once he shows he's serious about leave. Like, oh, okay. Gas card here. Fine. Didn't know it was that big a deal. Like, come on. Like, and then, like, they really are concerned about my health. Like, come on now, little fella. You know, you didn't even think of how you're going to pay for your health benefits. What if you mess around and get the Rona? Come on back over here. We got health benefits, gas cards, everything. Come on. Like, you're really concerned about my health and well-being. Come on now. Yeah, I think they'll give you other opportunities in the future to show that. And even about the burning bridges, which is a legitimate concern, I think, particularly as you said, they're so thirsty for experienced professional drivers, which you've shown yourself to be. Hey, you could probably leave in a professional manner. You submitted your 2 weeks notice or whatever, or, you know, I don't know, verbally indicated that, you know, you were transitioning and, you know, they tried to lure you to stay even then. I'm pretty sure you could have just, you know, no, thanks so much for the opportunity. I've learned a lot here. It's been a great experience, but I'm moving on. Got, you know, something else that I'm working on right now. And yeah, I'm going to see. Hopefully things will work out. Thanks so much. And appreciate, you know, whatever you need to say. Thanks so much for the opportunity and wish you all the best. It sounds like you could have just done that. Said no cursing out, no stomping. Don't call me back anymore. Just, no, I think, you know, I'm going to go out here and try this. You know, it's a good package, good offer. Go out, try something new. But thank you kindly for letting me know I am wanted. Always feels good to be wanted. You could have done something like that. And then if you left and it didn't work out, it sounds like you probably could have called them and they would have still been receptive. Like, oh, you want to come back? Oh, fantastic. We got that gas card waiting and we knew it. See your health benefits. We knew it. That type of thing. I think just as long as you leave in a professional manner, we talked about that with Emmy, right? She said, you know, she put in her 2 weeks notice, work out your schedule. I think as long as you do that and you did quality work, it's not a guarantee, you know, that they'll hire you back or anything. But I mean, hey, that's, you, sir, in my opinion, you're not going to be putting yourself in a position where they will be immediately, oh, no, we don't want that guy back. It sounds like they wanted to keep you. You left in a professional manner. I suspect you could have probably called them and went probably even now could probably call them up. And, you know, is that still a possibility? Do you think, you know? You said they're thirsty. They need it. And that they've said that for a lot of folks that, you know, people are kind of in need of people working. A lot of people are out of the workforce. It's been so destabilizing the last 16 months or so. So, hey, take advantage. If that is the case, I'm not saying be reckless or anything. Certainly think, use logic and plot strategically if you want to transition to a better job, but be professional in how you lead. That way you don't burn. But I do not advocate burning bridges, but I think transitioning in a professional manner is how you prevent burning bridges. You should, you know, leave courteous, professional manner. It shouldn't be a problem to go back and ask, hey, is it possible to return? Happens all the time. Again, much obliged for sharing. And the same thing that I say all the time, you know, like when we sit around, many of us victims of racism, and criticize other victims of racism, that's easy and worthless. The victim you are most informed about, I mean, the victim where you know every single error, mistake, all of that, and I mean fine details, the person in the mirror. That's the person that you should spend the most time critiquing, because there should be a lot to critique. I think all of us listening right now, live archive, still learning. Number 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Other folks who dialed in, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open. Proceed.
Can I be heard?
Bay Area Mom, yes, ma'am.
Thank you for taking my call. Greetings to you and everyone on the line. The guy that was just speaking, I remember a lot of his, especially during the beginning of the COVID, I remember they didn't care about anything. It snowed in, they didn't care. Nothing. You still get here. So I remember that, and I'm glad he's able to not need them. And I guess I do get it too when you're using it as a security blanket. That's a metaphor. I can see you using that as a means to survive just in case you need it. I get that too. And then I appreciate Gus's perspective as well, because that works. Well, it seems like it would. I miss all the clips. But my workplace racism is, so I had a overlap today with a supervisor that wouldn't come to the house of the little boy. So she finally came and was actually did some work. The supervisor always let me know to just stay on her. So I was on her on Friday when she overlapped via Zoom or whatever, the tablet, because that's not the one that he needed in person, especially with these made up goals. So I said, well, the next time, don't do the TV. Come here. Come to the house, because if you have all these goals that you have, I need you to run them. So okay, I'm going to come on Tuesday or Wednesday. So she came Friday instead, which was fine. So I had her run off. So all the goals that I needed her to run, she put on hold. Now, mind you, these are all the goals that she created. They were like 8-9 months ago. These are the goals she created. So now I'm saying, okay, we'll do it.
Tell me.
So, oh, I'm putting it on hold. What? So she put all the goals, all the dumb goals on hold. And then when I'm asking her about one of the goals is for him to tap my hand to ask me for stuff because it's not verbal. And he doesn't tap me. And I don't have time. I get it, but it's so complicated to make I'm only there 2 hours a day. And then he's asking me something. He's still communicating. I know what he wants. And it's like, oh no, no, don't pull my hand. No, don't pull my hand. Don't grab my hand and tap me. So I never got that goal. And I never ran it. So all the goals that just didn't make sense, I don't run them. And then I was like, well, show me. No comprende. Then I did demos to let her know. So a lot of these goals, regardless of how long they've been on here, he's not able to do it. And I'll show you. I saw, well, matter of fact, you show me. Show me how to give him to clap hands on cue. Clap hands. Show me how to do that. Clap hands. Can you show me? She's okay, look, clap hands. He's like, girl, you don't get out of here. Yes, that's doing it. That's what that's doing it. And she didn't do anything. Very interesting thing I'll do if that's the case. So nothing extra. Well, just mark it like that. You just do it like that. And just it doesn't do it, then, you know, hey, go something else. So the mother came over because I don't know what's the big deal about the extra hours, but the mom wants these extra hours. I don't know why. Anyway, she wants these extra hours, and she wants me to do the hours, which is fine. I can do her extra hours, and I can do extra hours with the AM girl, but no new friends. So then I was asking the supervisor about the new hours. So then she's saying they didn't even put in the new hours. Apparently it was supposed to be some elevated hours. They didn't even put it in because it's me. So they didn't add the hours. So the mom said she not only did she want the hours added, she wanted 5 more hours and she wanted me to be able to do it, or she doesn't want the hours. So, I wasn't really listening. I started doing other stuff because the little boy, he wasn't really interested in my supervisor being there and me, and we have these masks on. So he makes it seem like I'm bringing all these masked strangers to the house. So it's always loads of fun. So he really wasn't interested in any of it, but I wanted her to go over every single thing that she threw on this tablet and just run them. And whatever was dumb, like when I'm telling her that he doesn't, you know, he's not going to tap me. Well, he's not going to just be pulling your hand. But then when we're sitting there today, she's, oh, well, that's pulling your hand is good. Oh, no, that's good enough. Well, that's good enough. Well, I want to say, but I didn't. So I just saw how wishy-washy. Is wishy-washy something? I just saw how, Tuesdays, they are. They talk with both sides of their mouth, I noticed, because she knows what she said. She was making it very complicated for me before the in-person visit. But now, especially since, you know, I had everything in writing the way I did backing me up, now she's, oh, no, no. And then I can also do the work because I can do what I have to do with these children as well. So, I just thought that was interesting, and everything just changed, even with the school. So there's supposed to be no more school this month, right? No more school. No more school. They're paying that lady, just crammed that lady up, and she now is school. So now it's school. Whatever the other black supervisor said, she let that mom roar. And so now it's okay. What you want? School too? School help? Okay, he can do school help. She's about to create a program around the boys' school. So we'll see how it goes. I don't mind working with the little boy because it's interesting to see him develop. But I just think it's interesting how tricky they are. Okay, and I'll mute my line. Thanks for taking my call.
Context of white supremacy. Bay Area mom, much obliged. Man, I'm putting it, I was telling somebody else earlier, like, talking about things is so important. So just saying things, verbalizing things is so, we're not powerful, better word, saying things is so powerful. So I'll continue to verbalize. Hopefully our Bay Area mom, she will be dialing in soon. Better plantation, substantially better, where she has compensated, has a phenomenal increase in compensation, ease of scheduling, transportation to and from work, just huge boon for her career, huge improvement in employment over this, because it's just, she said, she shared this about, in my view, just total lack of regard for the children, like just, are we really concerned about the well-being of these children, or is it just, you know, slop anything down? Yeah, he grabbed your hand. Yeah, just put that down. Or, nah, no big deal. As long as we're getting paid and, you know, whatever. I don't know if these are if they serve predominantly non-white children or both or whatever the case. It sounded like this might have been a non-white child, but like, wow. That is just like total lack of concern for the employees, total lack of concern for the children that they serve, which... What does that idiot say? White people do not care about children, I think is how he says it. Yes. What an idiot. Anyway. But yeah, I think, I mean, with the hours, I mean, I guess if you have, it might just be that the mom recognizes that, wow, this company is really lame and it doesn't seem like they have any sort of sincere regard for children, with the exception of you, Bay Area mom. And if you are going to do the extra hours, yes, I'll take the extra hours with my child. If it's going to be one of these other insincere, lame folks, well, then no, I'm cool. Like your supervisor. No, I'm cool. Like, don't need them in my house wasting time and messing around with my child. And I mean, just I don't have children. But I mean, those developmental goals are important. And so you have children at a young age where they're not verbalizing or have some deficiencies. It's nice when you can get someone who is sincere about getting them the help they need, justice, as opposed to messing around, being a hypocrite, lying, making it seem like you're concerned and you're really not, which it seems like there is tons of this all the time with these young folks. And I mean, that's pretty common. Pretty kind. She said, I thought the word that she used was input words, you know, are important. She said, she was talking about how the supervisor, and she said consistently that it was her black supervisor who was the one who had been more helpful. The rest of the folks classified as white, loafing on Zoom in their footies, drinking lattes, all the rest of it, not helpful. She said the supervisor threw some stuff on the tablet. These are supposed to be goals. Now, and I mean, that's about what it sounded like. Just threw something up on the screen. Okay, yeah, here we go. Like, is this like a serious, well thought out academic plan? Or is this literally something that you just threw up on the screen? Thinking about children. Dr. Welsing, say her name again. When you play around with sex, the joke is on the offspring. They get to go to school and get some learning where the teacher, white woman probably, has just thrown something up on the screen. And then they tell you your child has special needs. Much obliged, Bay Area mom. The number again, 720-716-7300, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, no spectating for folks listening in. Let us know if your workplace is, you know, changed or not, if things are pretty much like they were 6 months ago in the workplace. They haven't really shifted things too much because of COVID-19, or if they've made drastic shifts. Let us know, and or if you are having any other successes, problems. We always appreciate tips, recommendations, and then do our best to try to offer suggestions based on logic to help, again, solve problems without creating new problems. We should be here tomorrow, 9 p.m. time difference, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, compensatory call-in. We will try to make sense of all of the wackiness that has gone down the last week or so. Man, talk about metaphors. Whew. President Obama, O.J. Simpson metaphor. I cannot wait. I was elated when I saw it, but that's tomorrow. Metaphors. F. Lee Bailey passed away yesterday. F. Lee O.J. Simpson, man, like, I cannot believe it was just the beginning of this year that we were reading flipping O.J. Simpson, like, this much. Orenthal James Simpson, man, but yes, F. Lee Bailey even passing away yesterday, and I made note he passed away at the age of 87. Johnny Cochran did not even live to the age of 70. Neither did Geronimo Pratt. Number again is 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, proceed. Let's see, I thought I had one. Maybe I didn't.
Hello.
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. This is the female caller from Georgia. I hope everyone's having the best evening they can have. My workplace has changed a little bit. It's still going on. I guess that's a good thing. It's still going on. But the manager changed. It's a seasonal job, so she, you know, her job is finished. Her turn is finished. So we have a new manager, and I'm kind of concerned because what they do is, you know, they love meetings and stuff. So we had, you meet him one-on-one, you know, over the computer because everything's remote. And, well, that's the nature of the job. That's not brand new. So, you know, hi, how you doing, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm just telling him what happened. And now he's like, oh, yeah, I'm going to lean on you. You're a big personality. I don't know what I did to be a big personality. Please let me know if I sound like a big personality. That's not my goal in life. I just try to tell people what they need to know so they can make the decisions and go on and do what they need to do. You know, she kind of did that a little bit, but she was also in charge of the bonus, and I got my bonus. So, you know, business is business. I got my bonus. So, you know, I had no problem. But I know there's no bonus coming. We are just here because they offered a new product and they put me in this department. I asked how I get this department. Oh, we blah, blah, blah. We like you. I don't know. So they wanted to keep those people that wanted to stay. So I'm still there, you know, not a problem. But I'm a little concerned about this guy because I was just telling him, I was like, you know, we really liked, you know, the people from our group really liked the boss that we had. You know, she was, you know, I'm just telling how she was. You know, she was good. And, you know, we really liked her. So, you know, you're going to have to, you know, you got some high standards because she was good. So he's like, oh, yeah, you're going to, you gonna love me? Then he said, oh, you're gonna say he's hot, which was weird. I'm like, I don't know what you mean by that. That's what I thought to myself. I was like, okay. Because every boss I've had, even when I worked here, worked for this company way back in 2011, all been women. So I didn't have this, oh, you're hot, and all that. They were all professional. They did their job. I had no problems with any of them. So I'm a little nervous about this guy. I don't know. So we'll see how it goes. But yeah, I don't know about this big personality thing. I don't know what that means. I'm very confused by that. And if anyone here thinks I have a big personality, I don't know what that means. And also about the professional athletes, I know it's not, they may not be quote unquote the most important. I don't know. But if someone drops popcorn or drinks and stuff in your eye, that could be damaging. And I know they have doctors, but I just think, you know, it may not seem like big things, but their lives can be in danger. People who have mental illnesses, especially young people who are killing themselves, you know, these are big things. So I guess because they most of them black, my heart does go out to them. I know I can't, there's only so much I can do, but I do feel bad for them, but that's just me. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am. Caller in Georgia. That is logical. I mean, that's true. You know, it's assault. I think some of these folks are and should be charged for assault. You know, throwing a water bottle or whatever else it is in any other case. If you or I did it to someone, but particularly a white person just out on the street, it would be normal circumstances. They would call the police, assault, and, you know, go talk to the judge. Hopefully, you know, they won't have tape of the judge calling you a negra and all the rest of it. So, yeah, I think that's totally reasonable to have some sympathy for them. And all of these folks should be charged, not just, you know, we're going to ban you from coming to the games, and charged, criminally charged for their conduct. Get out the cameras and treat them the same way that you would anybody else if this happened in a non-athletic venue. I guess as for your end, I mean, it's still a part of the same, you know, to have those visuals of white people just being unruly towards black people, as you said, because I think almost all these incidents, if not all of them, were black people, of white people being unruly towards black people, even star black, even Olympic gold medalists, black athletes. Kyrie Irving does have a gold medal. He was one of them. And Russell Westbrook, he has a gold medal, too. The folks that were being assaulted, some of the folks that were being assaulted, you're just a negro. And then they'll use the pandemic as an excuse and say folks are just excited because, you know, they just got out of the house. Influenza again. Yes. As for your situation, big personality. I don't know. They say Russell Westbrook has a big personality. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what that means. I don't know. Are you a flashy dresser? Think maybe they said that about Johnny Cochran. He also was kind of flashy too, so I don't know.
You only see my head. I'm working remotely.
You work
remote. I don't know.
I don't know. That's yeah, I would just trot that. Well, I mean, you did. I would just have to trot that one down. Or I might even ask him, like, you can wait. Sometimes you can ask questions like, do you remember Chip, we met, did our introduction. You said I had a big personality. You were going to lean on me to help, you know, kind of figure things out, do a great job here. What does that mean, big personality? And just have him explain it. Like, you don't have to be, that's one I wouldn't even be rude about. I would just be, yeah, if you recall, what does that mean, big personality? Because I haven't heard that one before. Like, you, that's a new one, big personality. What does that mean? And yeah, have him break it down. He might be truthful or might say he doesn't remember, but I might even just ask because I have not heard that one before. Big personality. Yeah. Or I guess the only times, Johnny Cochran, like I just said, Russell Westbrook. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Now, the other one. Go ahead.
I do know. I just want to say it didn't seem like a negative thing. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But in those other cases, those poor men, it seemed negative in their opinion. He didn't make it sound negative when he said it. I just don't know what it means.
Okay. That's important. I always say you're, you know, the expert. You said it didn't sound negative. So it may have been a that's what I'm saying. It may have been a compliment, and I just haven't heard it used. And people may have been complimenting Johnny Cochran when they said it. Yeah, I don't know. He can educate us both. Maybe he'll break it down and, you know, explain the compliment of having a big personality. Maybe you have it naturally. She said she was not trying to have a big personality. So maybe it's just a natural part of your aura in a constructive way, maybe. As for now, the other one. Now, you said, hey, you got some lofty standards, and the previous manager, she was cool, everybody liked her, got my bonus. Who doesn't love a bonus? You all are going to love me. Just give me a chance, and you'll be saying, oh, he's hot. Now, that is for sure going in the workplace journal because, I mean, in terms of talking about another person, that frequently has some sort of, like, sexual connotation. Like, that's not even like, oh, I think this person is cute. Like, saying someone is hot often means like, ooh, like, this is someone that I would like to have sexual intercourse with. Like, that's frequently what that means when talking about a person. When we're not talking about temperature, that type of a thing. Like, this is Gus. There is no context where I would be describing another person in a workplace setting as saying, ooh, Bill or Marcia is hot. Like, no. Like, I would not be saying that. It would be noteworthy. Like, okay, I'm going to put that in my journal and boop, if we have anything that seems like sexual, inappropriate, anything that I feel uncomfortable, we've already got one red flag, at least for me. Or I guess I'll ask, you said you felt like when he said that you had a big personality, didn't seem like he was, you know, trying to slip any sort of insult by you or anything like that. Seemed like it was a positive, a compliment, right on. When he said you'll be saying he's hot, what did you feel when he made that statement?
I felt like he chose the wrong word. I was like, that's not the word I would pick. I don't think he meant it in a sexual way, but that's just not the word I would use. I just didn't think it was an appropriate word. I was kind of taken aback by it. You know, I didn't really show it, but I'm like, oh, that's a weird choice of words. But, yeah. I don't know about these people. And then, he's different. Only had one interaction. No, I had enough. He was very helpful because I needed some help with something. And he did provide feedback on something work-related. So he did do that. So, you know. But, yeah, I just thought that was a weird choice of words. I think he's just, I don't know. We'll see. Because we're supposed to have these meetings every day. They're like 15 minutes. Oh, how's work, blah, 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 stuff like that. So we'll see how these go. I don't know. I wasn't trying to be a big personality. I was trying to shut up. But stop asking me questions. You know. But, yeah.
Yes, ma'am. He could have misspoke. You know, it happens to the best of us. I've done that as well. But in a workplace setting, and especially like referring to myself, that you all are going to be saying, I'm hot, like, writing that one in my workplace journal. Date time, that would be a great one if all of this stuff is via Zoom, to just already have a recording, and that way you have it saved so there's no dispute about what was said. And then, you know, if something else comes up where I'm having to think, like, what is going on, like, did he say, like, anything? So now it's like, okay, yeah, this has happened, you know, enough where I don't have a coincidence. If he did just misspeak and, you know, he's going to be professional, courteous, help get bonuses and all the rest, awesome. And this is the same thing I would do with anybody. Even if it was a non-white person, if it was a black person and they said that sort of thing, like, I'd be looking at them a little askew, like, whoa, like, professional. We have certain words. I'm not sure if these are words I would use in a professional workplace setting. Describing someone as hot, especially now in the Me Too era and all that, I would definitely think twice, if not out and out, never refer to your coworker as hot. Not a good choice of words, could land you in trouble. Let's see. Yeah, I guess, yeah, and you'll be able to learn. You said you'll have meetings and such, so you'll be able to study and see for yourself. Time will reveal. All you have to do is pay attention. But for other folks, again, I would recommend, if you know you regularly have to do a lot of these Zoom meetings and such, I would go ahead and record the session. If it's already recorded, awesome, save it. But that way you have a record, because it's just, there's been so much misconduct, Jeffrey Toobin and all the rest of it. Have your evidence right there, and hopefully you'll never need it. It'll just be junk you can, you know, delete, purge from your files at some point down the road. Let's see. Much obliged to our female caller. Let's see. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary to share, lines should be open.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, retired firefighter in Florida.
Greetings, Gus. Speaking of the employment of professional sports, I haven't been able to get in contact with Najee Davenport. I've tried to get in contact with him via his Facebook, to no response, which I definitely understand, you know, with the advent of, I'm pretty sure that, with his medical condition, is probably is bothersome. He probably wouldn't fully understand on how him being on the Kyle's program would actually help him in his situation, you know. So it may be some level of suspiciousness for some, you know, because I'm pretty sure you're getting a lot of resistance from the, well, that's really what the issue is about, getting resistance from the National Football League's former employees and former employer. I may try to send another message via his Facebook again. Once again, you know, thinking about the Olympic Games in Tokyo, which is coming up soon. From my understanding, it is on. And as I mentioned before, the Japanese government has basically supported the Olympic Committee in stating that they will impose some sort of action on any symbolic protest. They gave different examples, but when it came to racism, white supremacy, I can't quote exactly what they said, but it sounded kind of suspicious in a real negative, in a real racist way, on that particular description of quote unquote protest. I noticed out of all of the different types of sports that athletes participate in with the Olympics, the only history of any of most of the gestures are with track and field, primarily. You have non-white black people in basketball. Tennis just started, I guess, about two or maybe three games ago, which were probably, because it's every 4 years, so we're talking about probably 12 years ago, something like that. I was looking at a report on HBO about the issue, and they brought up three representatives of people who they call themselves, and they had on had T-shirts on, activists, whatever that means. I'm gonna get your words, whatever that means. Two of them were non-white black females, and the other one was a white male. The white male went on a knee in the same Pan Am Games that one of the two black females did a exact copy of Tommy Smith and John Carlos. But I'm not going to talk about the white male because, you know, I mean, that doesn't show anything, actually, as far as what a white person can do about racism, white supremacy. That's easy for a white person to do by getting on a knee. My question is that I wonder if the young people are considering, you know, something that's primarily a gesture of something that all who is concerned and all who have the power to eliminate already know about, you know, racism, white supremacy. So I'm not sure on what the symbolism is portraying and bases the consequences that is would be in store, because different from 53 years ago, these people are paid athletes. They're paid employees. They're paid. They get paid. I'm not saying they're all of them are millionaires, because they're certainly not, but they are getting a salary of some sort by participating in events all over the world, including the Olympic Games. And now the United States actually stated that they were going to support protests if they would like. So that's a, you know, positive, you know, from that standpoint. But that doesn't necessarily go for private industry. You know, I mean, you how long are you going to be a world class athlete? You're probably not going to be a world class athlete by the time that you're in your mid to late 30s or 40s in most of those sports, and you're going to be looking for employment. And I would not be surprised if some of the people who would do something would have problems when they start going around looking for viable employment. Just a thought on it. And we'd be interested on what others have to say about it also, because one last thing. I noticed since 53 years ago, I mean, I've seen a totally different reaction to getting to the podium. You know, you have black athletes are crying up on the stands when the national anthem is playing. There's a habit of grasping flags of that represent their particular country, quote unquote, and wrapping it around themselves as they're running around the track, which is totally different from 53 years ago, where that didn't go on. So I would say that it's probably going to be a low percentage, but it'd be interesting to see on what would be going on and what would be the reaction to it. And I'll be interested in anybody else who on their thoughts on it. Thank you.
Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. He brought up the CTE case with the NFL. I forgot Mr. Davenport. I did ask if we could maybe get him on the program. And I just saw this week, not this week, yesterday, NFL halts race norming to calculate brain injury compensation for former players. This is June 3. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it reads, the NFL announced Wednesday, yesterday, it would no longer use race norming. Talk about what does that mean? Yikes. Race norming? As part of its calculus to determine which former players were entitled to compensation as part of a billion-dollar settlement on players' traumatic brain injuries, brain damage. This would be great to talk to Mr. Davenport because this just happened. I think he was a part of the players who called attention to this. Like, hey, he didn't say, I don't think he used the term race norm. See, we can ask him, hey, Mr. Davenport, did you use the term race norming? Did you all make up that term? Or maybe he can tell us what it means. Maybe he can say, no, I didn't make up the term, Gus, but this is what it means. Say, I've learned something. But it continues. It says, let's see, as part of the 2017 settlement, the league was able to use so-called racial cognitive norms when evaluating the extent to which a player was suffering from the effects of a brain injury, which in turn determined the amount of compensation that player would get. The racial aspect, should say racist aspect of that equation, is as outrageous as you can imagine. The NFL compensation calculation was predicated on the theory that race could be used as proxy for a number of other socioeconomic factors in determining a baseline for cognition. The practical result of the practice was that when assessing the harm done to a player, the NFL's equation held that black players, like Mr. Davenport, started with lower cognitive function, which made impairment harder to prove, and in turn, compensation less likely to be paid than to white former players. More than 2,000 NFL retirees have filed dementia claims, but fewer than 600 have received awards, according to ESPN. More than half of all NFL retirees are black. According to lawyers involved in the litigation, the awards so far have averaged $516,000, not millionaires, as retired firefighter said, for the 379 players with early stage dementia and $715,000 for the 207 players with moderate dementia. Now, that's a sizable amount of money. That's a difference of about $250,000, depending on the type of dementia that they say you have. Now, again, how much is your brain worth? Definitely rhetorical on that one. And again, football, I mean, man, let me talk to Najee Davenport. I say football should be banned. What say you, sir? And then the follow-up immediately after that. Now, would you allow your offspring to play football? Do you? Maybe he already has children. Maybe they're playing now. That would be very next question. I think this should be banned. What do you think? And do you allow your offspring to play? But I mean, are you serious? And then they're going to practice racism and say the essence of all of this jargon and buckets of words, my goodness, is basically we're saying that you niggers like Mr. Davenport are a little bit ignorant to begin with. So you probably didn't have too much brain damage from football because your brain was already niggerized. That's basically what they're saying. We don't have to pay you because you all are already ignorant. You're niggers. And that would be another one. That's my assessment of all this. Race norming, they call it. Mr. Davenport, am I processing this correctly? Or is this your understanding? Maybe you got a different understanding of what all this means and have him break that down for us. But yeah, Woodland, and all of that for sure is workplace racism. They call it worker compensation and your health care package and all that. Like, wow, we go through all this, I get brain damage, and then you tell me that, oh, because of your racial classification, you're not white, you're a little less intelligent to begin with, so we don't have to compensate you as much as we do people classified as white, like Brett Favre. Wow. No football? Do not allow your child to play football? Whew. Community service announcement. Anyway, all of that, I guess, one subject. Boom. There have not been tons of black people who have been allowed. That's supposed to be amateur sports, but I mean, again, same thing I said last week. The reason that they are pushing for the Olympics to proceed in Japan is they have spent billions of dollars. Now, the athletes are not billionaires or even millionaires, but I mean, it's amateur sports, but there's a lot of money, like contracts and come get on this Wheaties box and endorse these running sneakers and, you know, all the rest of that stuff. And I mean, you should be compensated. You put a lot of time. That's a job. You have to put all the time and energy and training into doing all of that. All of that said, there have not been like tons. I mean, if you start thinking about the Olympic sports, and then also keep in mind, they only just started allowing NBA players in the 90s. So it used to be a lot more white players on the basketball team. So once you start getting it, I mean, thinking about the Olympic sports, there it's archery and weightlifting and synchronized swimming and volleyball. Like, you are not going to have tons of black people in any of it. Even now, you don't have tons of black people, but certainly you go back 1960, 1950, like, those are the type of sports. Even now, it generally is going to require a lot of resources, access to facilities and expenses and training and coaches, and just, you're going to have fewer black people who are going to have access to that. So it'd be fewer opportunities to have famous black synchronized swimmers doing a black power fist in the pool, or that's even laughable to think about, weightlifting or whatever else. And even, as I said, basketball, they only recently started doing the NBA thing, which made it much more black people on the basketball team. That was not the case not that long ago. So track and field, I think, is probably only one of the few sports where you're going to see consistent, have seen for a long time, consistently a lot of black people. And that's the other word. It's not just one black person by herself, where you're with a number of black people, where you might have the courage, where you're not by yourself on the podium. It's not just Tommy Smith. It's him and John Carlos. So it's probably a lot of factors. But the biggest one being is probably haven't been tons of black people allowed to be at the Olympics. They practice racism in disallowing black people from many, many jobs, Olympians included. And even if you do, like I said, Russell Westbrook, Kyrie Irving, they both have gold medals, and they both been assaulted in the last 7 days. So what is it to be a Negro Olympian athlete? Let's see. Much obliged, retired firefighter in Florida. Let's see. Number again, 720-716-7300. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Again, no spectating. If you figured out any codes, things that work well to help solve some problems in the workplace, share. We do not need spectators sitting on good information that could benefit victims of white supremacy. Other folks that are with us have commentary to share. Let folks kind of get their thoughts together. Again, no spectating. Again, we will be here for the compensatory call-in at 9 p.m. on Saturday. We'll kind of go over news and events past 7 days. It has been the system of white supremacy, I guess, the only way to describe things. But we'll try to catch up on what has gone down, all of the nonsense about Tulsa. I guess I shouldn't say Tulsa. Oh my God, I knew it was something I saw that was in West Virginia. They have all these wacky incentives, right? In Ohio, they have like a lottery system where you can win millions of dollars. You can be a millionaire if you get vaccinated and you win the lottery out there. But they have all these crazy programs where you'll get like playoff basketball tickets and all this other stuff if you get vaccinated. In West Virginia, they apparently have a program you can get a gun if you get vaccinated. That's been the year it's been, 2020, 2021. Armed hysteria, or encouraged armed hysteria through and through, as if we didn't already have enough folks running around with their firearms and mad about things. Now we need to have even more. That'll be tomorrow. We'll try to make sense of it all. Wow. Wow. Let's see. Folks are getting, I feel like I had one more workplace racism suggestion. I would pay lots of attention, I'd pay lots of attention with regards to the COVID-19 situation. As I said, hopefully we'll get some people. They can kind of let us know if their workplace has stayed the same. Are they switching it up? You know, relaxing things, as it were. In the workplace, let us know how about all of that. I would not be reckless, I'll put it that way, about things that are happening in the workplace. I myself am not, you know, in a hurry to go back and start chest bumping folks and high fiving and all the rest. I have not been vaccinated. Even if I was, I still probably would not be in a hurry to be rushing back into all of that. But I would not be reckless. I would also check the policy and procedure very carefully to see what the protocols are, what are they requiring. If they have opportunities for you to work at home, I would explore that. I think many non-white people, we heard directly from Cal's listeners, investors who said they benefited from being away from the office. They feel like their health, well-being, productivity increased. They didn't have just even small, where I want to retract, it's not small. Things like having a white person who is talking to you about irrelevant things. That could even be a non-white person, but particularly a white person, just talking to you about irrelevant things, where that minimizes your productivity. And we've had tons of that over the years, where I'm trying to work and you want to come in, like I said, you want to come in and talk to me about, you know, the neighbor's pet giraffe that you don't like. And you think your wife's having an affair and your child might flunk the third grade. We came here to work at the courthouse, the firehouse, the law firm, not to talk about your personal family dysfunction. Do not dump on me and having folks saying, man, not having to deal with all that. I don't have to listen to Fred's nonsense, know about his rowdy kids and trifling wife. Like, my productivity has spiked. Like, we heard tons of folks who said that. So check the policy and procedure. If they're making space where I think hybrid work environment is what they call it, maybe you can do 3 days at home, 2 days you come in, take advantage. If you can do some elbow twisting and get 4 days at home and 1 day in, do it. I think non-white people, I mean, if we can maximize benefits from this, that would be spectacular. I think so. I suspect everybody here, if they go to a workplace, like a physical workplace, I suspect it would be difficult to do this if you do, you know, professional driving, that type of a thing. But if you're in an office environment where you could be at home, oh my God, I think all of us would benefit. Not having to be around these folks and their tackiness or what have you. There's some trade-offs with that for sure. But I mean, wow. Just even for some folks, just eliminating the commute. We've had folks over the years who've given all kinds of reports about that alone. Just, you know, the getting to the office for all the terrorism is another round of terrorism. So take advantage if they're allowing that, or even if you can just ask, is that possible? And you can tell, and you can be legitimate about it. Like, man, you still got concerns and the school situation, if you have offspring, is still unsettled, and it would benefit your family and you as well. Maybe you could do the hybrid situation, be in there 2 days, even at minimum, if you just got one day, like I said, the best we can do is you can work at home one day. You have to be here the other four. Like, man, every work situation I've had, that would be cause for celebration, watermelon dance, like all of the above. Like, at least one day I can look forward to being at home and not terrorized by everyone in the office. So take advantage if you can. Let's see. Star 6-1 to other folks. If you have commentary again, no spectating. We will. Let's see. Caller in Florida should be with us as well.
Yes, sir. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners and callers. I wanted to make some reports on the updates at the workplace, the courthouse. The first is we got some, I think the term they use is retroactive pay on the last paycheck, because we went through a furlough last week around, not last week, but last year around the time when we had the Elvis, weddings going on. So the drive-thru is closed. And I'm still thinking people are still finding out that we reopened back on this past Tuesday. And we're starting to get some walk-ins back. So the supervisor has finally tried to put forth some more effort after we had another, I guess you could say it was a little bit tense somewhat, but I was asking my questions about getting correct treatment like the other side. And she, once again, practicing racism. When it came to the last person that sat to the third desk, they still are trying to find a qualified person to fill that spot, right? So she was saying that, well, a lot of people don't want to work, and she could be trying to use that talking point, because I guess there's been a lot of reports of, you know, that's been affecting the economy because of the unemployment. And I don't know if it's different from different states or whatever, but I just don't believe that necessarily. And then I made a point about how one of the people she told us about was going to need some hand-holding. That's the metaphor she used. And she said something different. She said, the reason why I didn't hire that person is I don't want any clicks. She used the word. She used the word click. So I said, well, based on the things you told me before, given the fact that you didn't hire the person, wouldn't the click still expand if she were to get hired elsewhere? she started stuttering, right? Because the reason I said that is around that time period, the person that leaves it, that's been getting all of her friends. She has like at least maybe 10 people in like the last 7-8 years, or an extension of someone she knows. That's how they do it. All right. And the warden has allowed them, because she is a white female, you know, like pretty much the bulk of the clique. So they have gotten their social circle into the office in the different departments. So this girl was introduced as someone's friend, you know. So she basically was being deceitful once again. So, and I said that I am insulted and humiliated by the lack of a plan for this space over here for when we do this reopening, right? Because this lady, she took some paper, right? You know, the printer paper and some tape and put it over the slot holes on the partitions. So I ripped mine off of the one that where she put on the mine. I'm like, what is this? This is tacky. This is unprofessional. You know, that's what I'm thinking of myself. So she left the office. I don't know if it was because of, you know, maybe I made her upset. I don't know. I was just telling the truth. So after that conversation, I knew the word was going to get out. So people was trying to say, well, you know, you have a good weekend and, you know, to move on to my next one, I came back at the end of the day. And now this particular member, white woman, maybe like, I don't know, two, cause I'm 34. So she might be like 36 or something like that. Right. So, she approaches me about the receipt I'm about to take to the supervisor's office. And she's like, oh, hey, you know, I'm glad you're back. And I'm like, why are you sounding so happy like this? You know, are you sounding happy like that with everyone else? She says, well, I try to, you know, it's Friday and everything. And, you know, just a bunch of nonsense. So, I walk past her and then she calls me again. And the black manager, right, is within ear distance in the area. So I walk back up to the female white woman, and she was like, oh, well, the supervisor wanted me to forward you an email, you know, and then she used a metaphor. Well, I don't want to step on no one's toes. I don't want to step on anyone's toes. And I could see in the peripheral again, the black female, the manager, I know she could hear what she said, right? So, you know, obvious racist insult to her. And she was like, you know, it's just the schedule for what's coming up on Tuesday because it was going into the holiday. So I said, okay. So I just turned around and walk off. So she's been using this over-exaggerated, you know, phony surface, courteous behavior toward the black staff member. So she went from me and then went to the black female manager. She says, oh, well, hey, such and such, you know, how are you going to enjoy your days off for the holiday? What are you going to do for the time off when you're on your time off? And then the black female says, what I do, three words. And I just thought that was absolutely like beautiful. So, I mean, cause we don't really, you know, talk that much, but I thought that was a beautiful response because she knew that she was faking, you know? So, and I wanted to share, like two, three more. I heard another, victim of racism also use a metaphor while, and I didn't try to advise her and not to share her personal business, but another black female friend of hers did that worked on the job, but she's gone now. So she tried to tell her, hey, don't share things with people here. You know, don't do that. So she's continued to do this. And she was making a comment about what she says in her mouth. Okay. So, and the way that she said it is, she says she's a pistol. And, you know, the white girl that she was talking to, like, what? Who are you talking about? Oh, my mouth. She a pistol and I know her. Right. So, because I know if I say something, I'm going to hurt somebody's feelings. So I just pretty much just put on the earbuds. I'm like, is this it? Are you getting that personal in what you share with this person? You don't know what she's going to go back and say. So my next observation is I've noticed also that a white person walked through and she did the whip. She mimicked the whip cracking and tried to laugh while walking by this black female, the same one actually. And no one really responded. So that was one that I wrote down. And then another white person tried to do that, speaking to her and saying that he didn't know that at the other building that her daughter worked there. And he says that I've been giving her, quote unquote, a hard time and saying that, oh, well, you need to eat something because I guess you might be thin or whatever. You know, you need to eat. You need to eat something. I can bring you a sandwich, all kind of stuff like that. So I'm like, man, like I know, not that I would want to do this, but I know good and well I could not get away with something like this. But also I wanted to share the customer, the black male customer that they tried to get me to assist. That is asking for things that is beyond me. I provide customer service for records, and he has been speaking about things, about putting things in writing and, you know, raising his voice at people. And I just don't think it's constructive. So he's been said to be put with, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, another black male, you know, so I just think that's just, unprofessional and not safe, because every time the bailiffs are always coming around this person, and you know, the person is homeless, it seems like, has nowhere to go. He's cursing people out, you know, and it's like, and just to end, I spoke with a black male this morning in the filing area, and then I said this to him because this is a supervisor. Oh, he said, oh, it's because you're black. So I said to him, I said, well, you know, I was trying to pretty much verbalize that myself. And then he said, I'm trying to say it in his words, but they feel like because you're black that, oh, well, you'll pretty much be able to, you know how he is, and he won't curse you out and do anything like that. Like, don't believe that, because he's engaged with the guy as well. So, because I also said, I'm like, what does me and the other guy that's black have in common? Because I'm not a manager. He's a manager director. So how do you go from him to me? And then he said, because you're black. So, and I said, exactly. So, we were walking out, and then the lady, the warden, saw me and him walking together. So she obviously don't like engaging with me too much, especially since I just saw another gang member, you know, a white female. She was in her office, HR, speaking to her like, I'll use a metaphor, like a high school classmate or a regular associate, right? And the warden looked at me, and I just asked the warden, like, did you have any FedEx or UPS packages that, you know, that needed to go out? She looked kind of like worried, like, oh, he caught us, he busted us or whatever. So that just like another example of how she keeps that kind of clique kind of syndicate going in the courthouse. So that's all I have to share. Thanks for allowing me to speak.
She called them a syndicate. Lord. The Florida courthouse. Never. No one disappoints, man. Never disappoints. Excuse. Let's see. The inability to hire an adequate number of employees, and then they come with all of these excuses like, oh my goodness. They will say that for so many different fields, for so many different reasons, especially when it comes to hiring a black person, or in this case, even you have black people who are struggling because they're understaffed, and they will have so many excuses. We can't find anyone who's qualified. Nobody wants to do this job. Oh, this person, yeah, she's just not going to be qualified to do anything. Oh, we didn't want to increase the clicks. Now, I mean, that's absurd. We didn't want to increase, you know, clickishness. You know, we want everybody to feel included and welcome. Just one big happy family. You don't want just little bands of people who just hang out amongst themselves in one place or the other. Like, what? Are you serious? Come on. Come on. I just fell off the turnip truck. You cannot, in the great state of Florida, we cannot find one person who would like to come down and work at. We got benefits? A job with benefits? Come on. And now this is magnified because we know we're going to have an increase in traffic. People know the courthouse is back open. We closed the drive-thru and no more dancing Elvis. Back to regular courthouse hours. Maybe we need to get that other person in here. Segregated section. You all will make it work. You're niggers. You'll make it work. And so, well, what are we going to do? You know, people are coming back in. What are we going to do for safety? We got this, I found a roll of tape in my office, and I think we'll just cover the vent holes. That should suffice, don't you think? What in the world? Like, are you serious? Paper and tape on the slot hole, and that's it. No marks on the floor, distancing, no. Woof, it does not. And this is, again, at the courthouse. I mean, it's not like you don't have any budget. We couldn't have went and went to Office Depot, see if they got some dividers or anything. We don't have $50 in petty cash for that at the courthouse. Like, dang. I think I said for a minute, in a workplace setting, black lives do not matter. And I mean, in terms of your health and safety, you really have to be the one who prioritizes your health and well-being, because I mean, you'll get this index card and a piece of duct tape to cover the peephole or the slot hole. And that'll be our safety plan for you. Make sure you don't lose your index card, because you get one index card per week. Let's see. And then I said you should put that in my view. You could take a picture of that and put that right up there with the hospital workers who had on garbage bags. Like, that's what our year and whatever it is, 16, 17 months has been. Garbage bags for PPE, duct tape, index card over the slot hole. That's our plan for the colored section at the courthouse. He correctly identifies this tacky, unprofessional. What? Ungrateful nigga. She leaves like, wait till I go back and tell the co-workers, colleagues. Yes, wait till I go back. This nigga is out here. Do you believe he had we got brand new index cards. That is fresh tape, and we covered up all the slots. And him to say that it is tacky and unprofessional. Michael, I'm not talking to him anymore this week. What a coon. Like, you want to talk about some unjust networking. Like, wee. Let's see. All right, now, talked about before, some people have said, hey, with victims of racism, that's what I said at the beginning of the program. Like, this is not my homie. It's not my black brother. Not my black sister. They are hot Patti LaBelle's on their own. Everyone has not taken that position. Some folks say, hey, I will try. I am my brother, sister's keeper. I will try to look out. Hey, brother, don't share personal stuff in the workplace. Sister, you know, keep your business, you know, everybody here is not your homie. You don't want to be broadcasting things. We've heard a number of folks who say, hey, sometimes victims will take that advice. Sometimes they do not. Oh, well. Again, I just say whatever you share, be willing to have everyone in the company hear, read what you said. That said, now that is phenomenal advice. Don't go around, you know, sharing your personal business in the workplace. That is not smart for about a billion different reasons. Now, this person going out and, you know, that person is a pistol and whatever that means. That person is a pistol. And, you know, I got and it seemed like I wasn't there. I'm just, you know, it seemed like the person that she was talking to, it wasn't like they had been chatting it up. Or it seemed like they weren't even aware. Like they were doing their work. Or whatever. Like, what? What are you talking about? Pistol. She's what? What? As you have no idea. Is this person going to hear this and just be like, what is she even talking about? I'm going to make sure I go report this and we're done. Like, what? You've got this crazy person out here working. She's talking all of us. Pistol that. Is she some gun? Like, you have no idea. Like, whatever you said, how that's going to be twisted. You and I said before, somebody else, if they overhear what you said, much less, this sounds like straight gossip. Never cool to just be sitting around gossiping about other coworkers and talking about their personality or whatever. You like them, you don't like them. Like, come on. Like, that's not what you're on the clock to do. And certainly with some, you know, stranger, that might be their best friend. Like, she's gonna go back, wait till Karen gets back. I'm gonna go and tell her, do you know she called you? I mean, come on. Let's see. The whip sound. Oh, we can contrast. So we got one. That's a bad example. You're in the workplace and you're sharing personal things and all this with other folks, gossiping, like bad on many levels. You get the other black female. She comes through. Hey, what are you gonna be doing on the weekend? What I do. Bruh. Brilliant. No personal information. That's not being snippy. That's not being, you can say that with a smile. What I do. You don't even have to, I say you normally ask a question back, but smile and keep on rolling. You don't have to give any details and get all in your business. I'm being courteous. I answered your question. And with as few words as possible. I love it. And we can all, that's easy. We can all sit around and do that. Just come up with, you know, little short responses that you can say to answer a question where you don't have to give a big monologue. Less is more. Now, I had to go through my phone for a minute, and retired firefighter is here, so I got a witness. Now, he said the white woman went through and did the whip sound, the whoopsh, as she was walking through. Now, I would have probably let that one ride. If you caught me on a day, if it's one where I got in my 2 weeks notice, or I don't really care about this job, or, you know, I'm feeling a little looser with my code. We're in the state of Florida and a white person does that. I whip out my phone. I might even have to ask them. I can keep it in the question lane too. Like, whip out my phone and say, wow, have you seen the monument that talks about the Florida cracker? Still in the question lane and just ask. I'm sorry, sir.
Oh no, I was just reacting.
I would have to bust out my phone, like, whoop, 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 whoop. Let me flip back. Retired firefighter. That was a part of the Cal's yoga retreat in Florida. Folks were saying, hey, the Rona looked like it might be ebbing. We could do a retreat sometime soon, maybe. We'll see. But when we did do the retreat at the end of 2019, we pulled over. They had a big bronze statue, and they talked about the Florida cracker. Let me see if I can flip. I have so many food pictures. See if I can do this without taking too much. But it included slavery, animals. You got to use that whip. You got to do some cracking to get all kinds of beasts and niggers to behave correctly. Let's see. Oh, almost there. Let's see. So long ago, a year and a half. We stopped and took pictures of all of it because they had cows leading right up to the sign. And then they had the Florida cracker emblazoned plaque So let's see if I can. Almost there. All right, here we are. The retreat. And it was on my face. It's on my, you can look on my Facebook page too, people. It's right there as well. All right, here we go. The Florida Cracker. So it reads, unlike their better known Western counterparts, Florida cowboys were known variously as cowmen, cowhunters, and perhaps most famously as crackers. This last term is widely believed to have been derived from the explosive sound made by their long leather whips as they rounded up and drove their herds to market. The Florida Cracker didn't run cattle on dusty, wide open plains, but rather with the aid of their tough, compact cracker horse and tenacious cur dog, they gathered their herds a few head at a time in Florida's swamps, forests, and endless palmetto scrublands. In addition to heat, humidity, razor-sharp sawgrass, insects, snakes, alligators, bears, and panthers, Florida crackers did battle daily with the wild and wiry long-horned Florida cattle that were descendants of the stock brought to the New World by Spanish explorers in the 1500s. The Florida crackers were tough, independent, and resourceful characters in a sparsely populated frontier that remained unmapped, wild, and dangerous long after the American West was largely settled. The Florida Cracker. This is in close to Orlando. We saw this at. But anyway, yes, I'd have to pull that out, like the long history of the Florida Cracker and their explosive whips. Did you know about that, man? Like, if you caught me on the right day, because you could still stay in the question. And I mean, that's, I talk about that all the time. That's state history. Like, they got these markers all over Florida. Like, boop, have you seen this? That's your history, Florida Cracker. I don't know if I'd say all that, but I mean, woo, I would be tempted if you caught me on the right day. Let's see. And all that about the, I guess talking to the person was talking to somebody else in the work environment, and oh my word, and you know, you said you were making it hard for my daughter, and blah blah blah, and you're not eating, and it seems like they're always trying to make somebody eat in the courthouse setting, like for years, like some black person, janitor, or somebody else that they're trying to force food on, and all the rest of it. Again, I would try as much as possible to stay out of personal business. I would try and minimize if you do have other relatives who work there. It wouldn't be something that I would be broadcasting and making known or widespread. Just again, same type of thing. You never know who is listening, especially I think the last one he shared, there's so much gossiping and clicking and clickishness. In the area where you have like this warden, where she goes by, I'm gonna talk to him, get out of here, and then she sneaks on by and goes back to the other clique members, and they're like, he said, it seemed like, you know, I'm in high school or something, like I'm, and then he walks in, yes, like, are we at the courthouse? Like, come on, like. I think you just said we can't even get full staff in the segregated section because you don't want clicks and all the rest of it. And you all are giggling like we're in ninth grade. Like, come on. I mean, and probably giggling about some non-white people and all the rest. Might even be giggling about no staff for the colored people. Like, we're just going to have them working. Do you see how we put all the index cards with the duct tape? Woo! Oh, yes. I will talk to you the rest by text. Wink, and then they move on like tacky, trashy, terroristic. That's another reason I wouldn't participate in gossip, because it will make you stand out. There's so much of that in the workplace, like gossip, got like racist man, racist woman. They are no model for not gossiping, like all day long, especially in the workplace. Just gossip, they'll have like whole departments that'll have like grudges and things bent up against another department in the building. So they sit around and gossip about them all day long and vice versa. Like, stay out of all of that, because they are, if you're a black person, they are for sure gossiping about you at some point. So you're not special, but stay out of all of that. I'm here to be professional, not to talk about the people in the cubicle next door. Yikes. And the black person, I forgot. So much, they always have so much things going on. I said that before, the redirecting the black people to have to talk to other black people, even if it's patrons and they're unruly or what have you. And then they give some nonsense logic to say, well, you know, you can understand, so brother. And all of us said, no, he made it. It's because you're black. Yes, it's not. We know the secret Negro handshake and we both member of the Al Shot. No, it's because you're black. Now, really, the correct way is because of racism, white supremacy, because, I mean, what does that even... We talked about that already, too, the blackness thing. Like, what does that mean? I don't... Anyway, but that is all nonsense, and I've seen that. It's always something non-constructive. It'd be totally different if that black person came in and he had on a tailor-made three-piece suit, attaché case, $5,000 shoes, and he was like, oh, yeah, you get him. I don't want to talk to that fella. You know, speaks... impeccable English, it would not be, oh yeah, you get all the black folks, go ahead and deal with that fella. No, it's you give me this fella who's cursing, might be a security threat, might have a weapon of some sort, like I don't know what's going on. Yeah, you need to talk to your soul brother. Yeah, that's not because
I'm...
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, and they were talking about guess possible, because I still haven't spoken to the guy yet, just from, you know, from what I've heard from both black people and white people on the job, you know, it's also, I guess, mental issues and everything like that going on, but he's making accusations of people taking things from his, taking documents out of the file and everything, and we have to trying to order the file from archives. He's like, no, I want to see it right now. And it's like, oh my. But usually they have to help him over across the hallway, just to provide more context. But it's definitely accurate about how they try to apply the black staff members to the black customers that they, I guess, don't want to help assist, that they are practicing racism in that way. And to mention about the word cracker, have you encountered, like, in a workplace where there are white people, I guess, somewhat embracing it, like, saying, because I heard a white woman say, like, I don't have no problem with it, you know? I'm a redneck and a cracker. I'm a redneck cracker. Right. So like, I don't get why everybody gets so mad. So I didn't give a response. She didn't ask me nothing on that one. And I know I had mentioned it was a white guy that came in there, and the shirt on the back of it, it said Florida Cracker, just like what she was just describing. So white people definitely aren't ignorant. And then they know how to make little jokes and saying, oh, well, you know, that came out wrong. The Cheez-It snacks, they're crackers, right? Cheez-Its in the red box. Like, one of the white females again. Oh, that came out wrong. I just wanted some crackers. You know what I'm saying? So, like, they study and they talk about that, like, all the time. So that's all I wanted to add.
Can I be heard?
I can hear you.
Okay, maybe Gus got disconnected. I'll proceed slowly if I can. I'll be short and I'll be brief.
Okay.
So, at my plantation, security has been laxed. Or relaxed, rather. We used to have a temperature gauging station. They removed. We also had a guard there. They removed both the station and the guard. We do still have the masks. I was going through my emails at my facility, and I noticed that there was a $200 incentive for proof of vaccinations. So, we're seeing the 70%. goal. Apparently, once we reach 70% at our facility, I guess it's back to the standard way that we operated before the pandemic. I'll state it like that. I don't want to say back and all. In my environment, I have this non-black, non-white, I would assume Asian male. And today he did something very interesting to another black male. And it actually got the black male in trouble with the black female. He was having a private conversation, not work-related, with the black male. And he said some offhand comment like, I like you, you know, we should go out and we should get black girls together. To which the black male responded, you know, my main goal when going out isn't to get black girls. I guess as a way to say he's not interested in hanging out with the other coworker outside of the facility. And a black female asked the black male, what's wrong with black women? And the black male kind of froze. And it was like, it was very strange. And I was confused, and I asked, just for clarification, she's upset at the black male for not wanting to go out to hunt or pursue black females with the Asian. She's not angry at the Asian for saying, let's go get some women. It was very odd. It was very odd, very awkward. This coworker, the non-black, non-white Asian male he's very odd. He brings up strange scenarios. Okay. He'll ask you questions that completely aren't work-related, like, you know, up or down, left or right, in or out. And then he'll try to waste time, production time, conversing about things that do not pertain to our job at all. And then, like, he'll pull out his booklet and ask questions about coworkers and their work performance. Like, who's not working? Who's working? Who's not working? And he cornered a white male at the urinal, and inquired about a promotion. It was odd. This, just for him to tell the story. This is like the boss under the plant manager. So this is a pretty powerful white man that he's engaging at the urinal. And for like a week or so, he was bragging about how he was going to be a supervisor. And he's not even hired on with the company. And I don't understand this Asian male because, on one hand, he'll say, he's a person of color. And on the other end, he'll say he didn't get into dental school because affirmative action kept him out. He's confusing to me, and I choose not to engage him if it's a non-work-related issue, just because I want to. I'm trying my best to keep down conflict and not be in any close quarters or any conversation with this person. I don't think it would be constructive or conducive to my work environment. Thank you. That's all I have. Let me get my line.
Much obliged, Mo in Dallas. I got disconnected for a bit. I didn't realize it, so I wasn't being picked up on the line. And I think I didn't hear the tail end of caller in Florida's response, right, when he said there, of course, they're practicing racism. It's not that I get all the black people because I'm classified as black. It's because they're practicing racism. But archives should be fine. I just didn't realize it, so there was a little bit of discontinuity. Mo in Dallas, like, whew, that right there in a nutshell. I do not go into a work situation thinking that any of these folks are my homies, friends, brothers, sisters, compadres, whatever, even if they're non-white, victims of racism, probably confused, united, independent. So we start, now we have that word again. So we get this Asian male who says, hey, we should go out and get black girls. And say, let's go get black women. And say, go, let's go get black ladies. Black girls. Boys and gals. Dr. Welsing, again. So,
can I add something?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry. It's short. It's brief. The last time I called in on Workplace, I talked about my white male coworker who had the gun analogy with the female. He offered to, and I'm using his quote verbatim, he threatened to knock this Asian person the flip. He didn't use the word flip. He can put a modifier there if you want. But he offered to knock this Asian man the blank out. And in the presence of supervisors, by the way, and they got chuckled off. that's all I have. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for cutting you guys.
Wow. That's...
Didn't want to miss my violence.
That's the sort of thing that I've talked about. That's the sort of thing that I've cited as a red flag. That should be totally unacceptable in a workplace. Not just the language, but I mean to threaten to knock someone out in a work environment. That is not funny. I mean, that workplace safety, that's San Jose shooting that they're talking about. Like in this environment, everyone should say, whoa, no violence in a workplace. That is not funny. That is not something to snicker about. That's how you end up having that. I just said verbalizing things is very powerful. That's not funny at all. And the same type of thing. Imagine a black person saying that in a work environment. Anyway, back to the let's go get some black girls. I'm all professional. Everything just comes back to professional and workplace safety. But I mean, professional, like I do not fraternize with coworkers. Thank you kindly. Nothing else need be said. Like whatever his response was fine. But I mean, are you serious? Like, whoa. And I mean, it is not even just girls, like black girls. Okay. And then I always say this, like these conversations in the workplace should definitely be restricted to workplace matters because you never know who else is listening. Then you have another victim pops in out of nowhere. What's wrong with black girls? Now, I mean, you could take the easy one and just answer the question. Nothing. Move on about our day. But I mean, wow, he said it seemed like she, you know, was offended or maybe she didn't catch the full context. You never know when people are ear hustling or whatever, when they're not being directly included in the conversation, if they got the full gist of it or whatever. But either way, like I mean, why is any of this, like this is not our job to talk about our dating preferences or let's get together and go out and try to do some group dating. Like let's get back to our tasks. Jesus, like let minimize conflict. That is one way to minimize conflict right there. Like we are not doing any craziness going out and all this. We're just going to stay courteous and focused on the job. That will minimize a whole lot. Is that right that we almost spilled into conflict just on the mere mention of let's go get some black girls? Maybe I'm not interested in that. What's wrong with black girls? Like, whoa, 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 whoa. Come, everybody, let's get back to work. Be professional. The confusion, man, so much being cornered at the urinal, like, yikes. All I can say is non-white people generally are very confused. This fella seems confused, and many confused victims of racism are dangerous. I would definitely be very mindful if I spent any time around him. I would be very mindful about what I had to say, if I said anything at all. Just he seems like someone who could cause a variety of problems. So, yeah, I would just be very mindful about, you know, what's happening, what I had to say about him. It would be super, super codified and always just business. Nothing casual, nothing so that there's no possible way he can interpret anything like, oh, yeah, this Gus guy, he's cool. He's someone that I could approach and, you know, we could talk about some silliness, do some gossiping, or, you know, where do you get some illegal drugs? Like, nope, he is not the person to go to about that at all. In fact, he might rat on me. Like, that's the type of reputation that I would want to have, the way that I would want him to think about me. Wow, Mo in Dallas. Yikes. Dangerous work environment. We did our 3 hours. Hopefully something constructive for folks listening in. Again, we'll be here tomorrow for the compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. We will try to make sense of some of the things that happened over the past 7 days or so. Call in, share a thought, question, counter racist view. Hopefully, this was worthy of your time and energy this Friday evening. Workplace safety, I cannot emphasize that enough. That was the second thing that I was going to say when I was speaking before. And I said I had, you know, two things. I said check policy and procedure. That's definitely. See if you can take advantage, if you can get some extra days working from home. Brilliant. Two, workplace safety. That type of comment that we just heard. I will knock you the F out, or I'll knock you effing out. All of that, like, whoa, whoa. The incident in San Jose, the incident at the Indianapolis FedEx, I shouldn't say incident, slaughters. Like, each of these separate incidents had almost a dozen fatalities each. These types of incidents have just been increasing, according to many reports. Many people have encouraged, take this serious in the workplace. These type of statements are totally unacceptable. They are totally unprofessional, and they encourage this sort of thinking, violence in the workplace, and violence against coworkers in the workplace. Like, that should be an anathema. Like, are you kidding me? That's not funny. That's not joking. That is like, whoa, maybe you have some mental health issues going on. We do not even think about knocking out, striking, shooting another coworker. Take that seriously. That's why I said, that's one. You could talk to a supervisor, human resources, someone, and give them some of these articles. Just maybe we all need a reminder about making sure that we are being safe, promoting workplace safety, and that violence, even joking about violence, is totally unacceptable. Anywho, much obliged for everyone's participation. Sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. Protect the brain computer. Man, heard about the football players, like, my gosh, protect the brain computer. In addition to being sober, I'd just be very alert. In West Virginia, they've given out guns for vaccinations. Be alert. If you're going out, you are sober. If you are driving, you are not on the cell phone. We are trying to minimize contact with the Mark Furmans of the known universe, and we need our attention to be alert. That said, Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. No gossiping, no name calling, very small things we can all do to contribute to producing justice immediately, particularly in the workplace. Disciplined. No gossiping. No name calling. Cal signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.